Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic today, Adam. We are finally here. We made it after all after my Batcat wedding countdown. I guess I don't even remember when we started that, but it was like over 100 days before the wedding. It was probably in like February, because I think February was when they actually announced the date for the wedding. And so I've been counting down every episode since then, and we finally made it. There is no Batcat wedding countdown to do this episode, because we are here and we are talking about issue number 50 today.
I'd like to say that I remember when you started the countdown, but I tuned your countdown out a long time ago, so I'm not 100% sure when you started that. So I can't definitively say when that was, but I apologize for the fact to the listeners that I wasn't here last week. Some of you may actually think that was a good thing. I don't know, but unfortunately I was in a tremendous amount of pain, so I couldn't. It wouldn't have been much fun listening to me half the time try and talk about Supergirl, and then half the time, you know, writhing in pain. I wouldn't have made a good mix. But I do want to say that things are. I sort of know what's going on, so I'm getting that worked out. But I want to thank Jordan for doing the hosting duties, and also Rebecca for Rebecca Johnson from Supergirl Radio. And for, you know, joining Jordan and giving us an episode to be able to put out. And it was a really strong episode. And you both did a fantastic job.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It is great to have you back today, Adam. I'm sorry that happened and that you weren't able to join us last week. But I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better and that we've got you back. Back in the cape and cowl.
Yes, back in it. Fits like a glove.
Are you like Batman in the Dark Knight Returns coming out? It's like the page where he's talking about how it feels to be back in the costume, and he's like leaping out into the Gotham.
Well, you know, in some moments I do feel like that old version of Bruce Wayne. It depends how the pain acts up or not acts up. So there is some of that. Though I don't have nightmares about pearls falling to the ground, which is a good thing.
Because thankfully,
both my parents are alive, and I'm glad for that. But I'm back. We're here, and
then you don't get to hear a beautiful lie playing in your head.
Well, you know, I'll take not hearing the song and have my parents alive. So it's a good trade-off, because I can actually play the song from the soundtrack whenever the hell I want.
Okay, fair enough.
So it's a good trade-off. We do have a guest joining us for this episode.
Yes.
So I'll hand it off to you, and you can make the introduction.
Yes, well, this guest is somebody I've been wanting to have on the show for a very long time. My bat friend from college. I've talked about him on the show before. He was a member of my DC Comics Club in college. In fact, the only consistent member of my DC Comics Club in college. That's Harry Malinowski. Welcome to the show, Harry. I'm so excited to have you on. And I should say a fellow Batcat shipper. So this is an ideal episode to have you on for. So welcome, Harry.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely,
it's fun. It's, you know, he has talked about you before on the show, and said that you you were part of his club, and that's cool, because you were reading comics and supporting DC, which is always always nice to hear. So that's it's good. It's good to have you on, and it's a long time coming because Jordan's been name dropping you ever so often. So so it's good to finally put put a voice behind that behind all those stories. It's good. We do have one small bit of news.
They're saving. It seems like they're saving everything for Comic-Con. I think this is the most since we started doing this show. I think this is the least bit of news we've had the entire time. We only have one piece, really.
It'd be nice. I hope to God they're saving stuff for Comic-Con, because otherwise, then it's going to be a really boring show. When we do our Comic-Con wrap-up.
Even if there were zero news, which is not going to be the case, or zero trailers, which is not going to be the case, we know for sure that we're doing the Death of Superman movie review on that episode. Mm. So there will, at the very least, there will be that.
Yeah.
So then all the news is like the icing on the cake on top of that.
But there is also the trailer, like you said, there's the Aquaman trailer, which will probably drop online.
Yes.
The Shazam trailer or teaser or whatever the hell it ends up being, I don't know if they'll drop that particular one online. I mean, look, chances are it's going to leak if they don't, so it makes sense for them to do it.
I bet they will. I bet they will.
And then Wonder Woman 1984. The Wonder Woman 1984 stuff might be the only exclusive, like if there is video. That might be the one that where they say because it's a year and a half or whatever the hell it ends up being, far away. That might be the one where they save as sort of Comic-Con exclusive, if you will.
But even if they do, we'll probably get a poster for it, and I would say, and then there's also, let's not forget all the TV panels they're doing at Comic-Con. So all the TV shows are going to have news, probably.
I just want to see, if we're talking about Wonder Woman specifically, the only thing I really want to see right now is what Cheetah looks like.
I bet they'll, I actually would say that we'll probably get our first look at that, not in a poster, but in a trailer. And I think that's probably the best way to do it, is to get like, all of a sudden at the end of the trailer, like the end tease on the trailer would be like Cheetah like roaring or something. Like
I think that would be perfect. The perfect way to just tease the proper look of Cheetah,
right?
In all of her glory, like that would just end the trailer with that.
Can you imagine how awesome that would be?
Except, so it's kind of like the Doomsday reveal in BBS, but spoilery because we know Cheetah's in this thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to Doomsday, it's like, oh, I still don't get the complaint about Doomsday in the BBS trailer because like it was so much speculation that he was going to be in the movie.
We kind of did know. But it would have been cool if they left it on the like just the roar and then cut to black. I think that would have been cool.
Okay, that's I can see what you're saying.
The difference would be that Cheetah's confirmed, so there's no use hiding her in a trailer.
Last episode, Rebecca and I talked about that first image of Barbara Minerva.
Yeah, I think she looks good. If you want my opinion, not that you asked, but here's my opinion. She looks good. And like I said, to me, Patty Jenkins could do anything, and for right now I'll go along with it because you can't argue with the film. So yeah, I'm on board. I can bring it on. Bring on Comic-Con. Bring on a damn Superman announcement, for the love of God, please.
I think we're all feeling the same way David Sandberg is when he posted that picture of him like yelling at the Comic-Con at that little thing. You know the picture I'm talking about. Did you see that? That
he posted. Twitter? He says, "Come on," or something.
He's saying, "Come on, get here, whatever, hurry up."
Okay, here's a question. I just because we don't have much news, I'll pose to you guys. It sounds like we're getting some sort of Superman sequel. Do we think that if there is a sort of quote unquote soft reboot of the DC universe with the same actors but just sort of picking and choosing what they're gonna take from the past movies? I've heard rumblings that in interviews for Ant-Man and the Wasp, what's his name? Lawrence Fishburne doesn't sound very confident about him returning as Perry White. So my question to you is, do you think there's a potential for that role to be recast, or do they just leave Perry White out of it and assume that he's on assignment somewhere or doing something else?
I think that would be, if they didn't bring, he's phenomenal.
I'm not discrediting that. And you know,
if they didn't bring him back, I mean, just, I think that would be a big missed opportunity. I mean, I definitely wouldn't want them to recast Perry White. I do not see why on earth they would do that. They've got an amazing Perry White already in the role. Why would you do that? But if he wasn't going to be in the movie, then, like, I mean, it's very easy to explain that he's off on assignment somewhere. I mean, you even in Justice League, like, you saw the Daily Planet in that movie and he wasn't in it. Like, I mean, you just assumed he was in his office or whatever.
Yeah,
and
that's a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think that they would really go ahead and recast him. I think that, I mean, they would get too much backlash from that. Yeah. So I think it's either it's going to be Lawrence Fishburne returning, or they're just not going to have him at all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's one of the characters that you could sort of, okay, he's there, but he's in it. Like Jordan said, you know, maybe he can't get out of his office. The door's, you know, bolted in or something stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Perry, but it's not like, depending on the story they're trying to tell, it's not like he's necessary.
What do you need him to really do? Bark out orders? Like, what you can actually have him do a voice recording and just have it come out of the office.
Oh, like the Smallville finale?
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't need him.
Sorry for the spoiler, Perry.
No, it's all right.
and you know, it's... it'd probably be cheaper to get him to do a voiceover than to have him on set. So.
Oh yeah, that's true.
What's that?
What is he saying in these interviews that is making people think that he's not coming back?
Somebody posted a quote from one of his interviews. And so I can't give credit for the quote, but I saw it, and he said something that he doesn't think he'll be back as Perry White, and he says for him personally, Warner Bros. Has taken way too long to move forward on a Superman sequel. With that part of it, I agree, but that's what I'm hearing. So
that's weird. That is weird.
Plus, yeah, he recently signed with Marvel, and if they have a no compete clause,
Zachary Levi was in the Thor movie.
Yeah, but he was killed off. Right.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's something I'm actually a little worried about is how, you know, Jared Leto is also signed with, he signed with, like, Sony Marvel.
But it's Sony, it's not Marvel proper. I think they're...
Well, that's true, but, I mean, Sony and Marvel seem to, like...
Yeah.
They seem to be trying to do stuff together. So, I mean, the thing is, I'm worried about Lawrence Fishburne and Jared Leto doing stuff with Marvel and Sony here, because it feels to me like they're trying to... It seems like they're trying to move a little away from the DC universe, or at least trying to find job security in the least.
Yeah, I think what this leads to for me is I think we're going to get into a situation where it is sort of like a, I don't know any other better word for it, but soft reboot where they pick and choose what they want to keep.
Mm.
And or change, and then whatever they don't want to keep, they discard and or recast. So that's where I think they're going. Look, I know they say that, and then we'll move on to the harder because it'll segue. I know they say that in the press release for the Jared Leto thing with Morbius, they said this doesn't affect or this won't affect his Joker participation. However, I just have this sneaky suspicion that he could end up being recast, or they somehow find a way to work in if what's his name, Joaquin Phoenix, is successful in his other Joker movie, they'll find some way to work him in as the Joker going forward. That's just my feeling. But somebody that is staying within the DC family
Oh, nice segue there, Adam.
Is my Earth 3 wife Margot Robbie? I think it's Earth 3. I lost count of what designation I gave these people, but let's go with let's go with Earth 3. My Earth 3 wife Margot Robbie is staying put as Harley Quinn, and thank God for that, because that was one of the godsends casting wise from Suicide Squad.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And she is, of course, next going to be seen in Birds of Prey. She recently spoke with Flickering Myth, was it, Jordan?
Yes, Flickering Myth. Shout out to our buddy Ricky.
Yes, who was part of that website and that outlet. So she sat down with them for an interview promoting, she was actually promoting her other movie, Terminal, but as is the case when a DC actor sits down with anybody in media, they ultimately ask them what their next DC project is. And so Margot was basically saying that not only will there be diversity behind the camera with Kathy Yan directing, and but in front of the camera there will be a diverse cast, and crew will also be very diverse. And she points out to the fact that real life is diverse. There's a diverse mix of people, and that should be reflected in films. And she makes a lot of sense when she says that. So that's cool. She goes on to also confirm that the film will have a R rating and carry a smaller budget, which continues to show the Walter Hamada effect going on here.
I coined that term.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Just to cover our own ass, because I don't want to get sued, or at least I don't want to have to bail you out from getting sued, because I don't have that kind of money. Jordan said that to me. Whether he subconsciously heard that somewhere else, I have no idea. So if that is somebody else's thing, there's no infringement at work here. But yeah, so the Walter Hamada effect seems to be in full force there with the smaller budget and the R rating. I'm cool with that. I thought I was championing way back when that Suicide Squad should have been R rated, but here we are. One Dancing Enchantress later, and now we're finally getting an R rated film with Harley Quinn in it.
But Enchantress had nothing to do with that movie.
I know. I just like making fun of that. I just like making fun of that dancing routine because it's so ridiculous. At least she wasn't intentionally dancing, which was the finale to Guardians of the Galaxy Part 1. So in addition to the R rating and smaller budget, Margot Robbie says that the film will start production in January of 2019, which is closer than we think. So that's cool. And she also says that Harley Quinn will get a new costume/costumes. So all of that sounds cool to me. I mean, I had zero issues with the way Harley Quinn looked in Suicide Squad. That's well noted. Just go back and listen to my rantings, my rantings is not the right word. My adoring diatribes towards Margot Robbie and Harley Quinn. You can go back and listen to those. So I have no problem with her outfit in Suicide Squad, but if they want to give her something that looks closer to the comic books or the Arkham video games, I'm cool with that. That's the news. That's my feeling on it. Harry, what are your thoughts on all this stuff?
Well, I'm not really sure here, because I'm 100% sure the reason for the smaller budget for this film is because they want to pursue that R rating. And so with the R rating and the smaller budget, there's the possibility that the movie could be really bad. There have been successes with a small budget, the R-rated film. I mean, Deadpool is the huge success, and I'm sure that they're going to try to replicate that success with Birds of Prey here. But if they try to make, like, if their goal is to just make it an edgy R-rated film just for the sake of that and not to actually be faithful, that I'm worried that that's the direction it could take, and that might not go too well.
Fair enough. Yeah, I could definitely see that as a valid concern. But yeah.
I trust Margot Robbie, but I'm not entirely confident in all the possible directors and people that are going to be part of the production team. Like, I mean, the smaller budget is like, it's all dependent on how the directors and the rest of the production team uses it, and they have to put it in the right areas.
Yeah, and I think what will ultimately sort of ease your potential, you know, concerns is who is the antagonist? What are the stakes? Mm-hmm. Once we get a clear picture of those things, then I think we'll get a better understanding of what's going on here. But, you know,
because
we have so little to go on other than it's R-rated and it's a smaller budget, it does make it kind of difficult to really give, you know, a much deeper perspective or thought than the fear you're expressing. I totally get that. But Jordan, what's your take on all this?
Yeah, to quote London from History of the Batman, everything here gets a bat thumbs up from me. I love everything that we're hearing about this. It's very exciting that it's going to be starting to shoot in January. Yeah. It certainly looks like this is going to be the next DCEU film after Wonder Woman 1984. So I guess the fourth one up in line now. So I'm really excited about this film. So that's exciting that it's really this close to getting underway in terms of shooting. In terms of it being R-rated, obviously we heard before that was at least the plan initially. It looks like that is still going to be the case. I'm totally down for that. I feel like that could fit the character of Harley Quinn quite well.
It certainly fits Harley. I think it certainly fits Harley. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And also, absolutely. I mean, let's not. You see, we don't know what the Birds of Prey lineup is. We know Batgirl is there because she's been mentioned, you know.
Well, it was rumored that it was going to be Batgirl, Black Canary, and Huntress. We talked about that.
Right.
That was
but we don't have a definitive. So, like, here's what I'm saying. Don't discount the possibility that, because, you know, it's happened in the books, so I'm not discounting this possibility, that Katana becomes part of the team. Like another
character. Oh, I could see that happening too.
I could see that.
And let's remember, that character is so short-changed in Suicide Squad.
Oh, so true.
I kind of hope that she's in Birds of Prey, because I want to see more of her. Because I thought, I don't even know how to pronounce her name. I'm not going to try.
Sorry, Karen Fukuhara?
Yeah, that's it. I was just going to say Karen, because I don't want to butcher anybody's name. But yeah, she looked the part. The little bit we got of her looked like she portrayed the part well. So I'm like, I want more of this character. So I hope she ends up in Birds of Prey. And also, if Huntress is in fact in this, if it's Helena Bertinelli, because, you know, there is no, as of right now, there is no Catwoman in DC films.
Yeah.
So she could have not shacked up with Batman and had a child. So
they could establish that in Birds of Prey.
Well, they could.
They very well could, but that takes a lot more time to, like, now you're asking me to do even more setup. Let alone introducing the new characters aside from Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Let's now mention this other subplot So I think it will be Helena Bertinelli, and the point is, if she's got that mafia tie. Right, the you know, her and her backstory is rather violent. So again, that's another example of a character that fits the R rating motif. And the one thing that might allay your fears a little bit, Harry, is that we've heard from the get-go that this was conceived as an R-rated project.
True.
So it's not like, let's say, if had they seen Deadpool 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
And said, you know, they had been writing, and then all of a sudden a news story comes out and says, DC decides to make, Birds of Prey R-rated.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would have been a more skewing towards your thought process, because it's like, oh, look, Deadpool 2 just came out, And yeah. Because had they, if they were going to do that, you'd think they would have done that with Suicide Squad.
True. Yeah.
And that's where my that's why I'm not necessarily worried at this stage, because of that simple fact that they had their chance to sort of milk the R rating because of the success of Deadpool 1.
Yeah.
Well, Deadpool only came out a few months before Suicide Squad came out.
That is true. Yeah, I think they were already in post-production for Suicide Squad, so modify it for the R rating would have been a little tough.
Whereas they went, I think they went the other way. I think the reshoots that they had done and the editing they had done were to lighten it up. Mm. Right? So in fact, they went the opposite way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the fact that this was conceived as an R-rated thing, mm-hmm, has me a lot more at ease at this moment in time. So. But again, the good news is it starts production in January, which means casting can't be too far away, and that's always an exciting prospect.
I have no problem with the R rating. I'm all for that. I think that could work out really well. And in terms of the smaller budget, like you said, it goes back to the term I coined, the Hamada effect. Where I really think that, him coming from New Line, and to speak to your point, like, Harry, I think that there's been a lot of success doing R-rated films on, like, a really small budget that New Line's had. I mean, It is a great example of that.
Oh, that's
how
true.
How much success it had. And so it's like, that's sort of what New Line's been having a lot of success with smaller budgets and a lot of those films being R-rated films. And so I really feel like, it was R-rated, right?
What's that?
Yes, it was. Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. My point being that New Line's had a lot of success doing that. So, Hamada coming over from New Line, and then a lot of other people now with DC who had been involved previously with New Line, they've got a lot of experience doing that. And this is something I've been championing for a while with the DCU, that they need to bring the budgets down. And it looks like that's exactly the case here, that they're bringing it down. Mm-hmm. So that's great. In terms of the new costume, I'm like you, Adam. I loved her costume in Suicide Squad, but as long as the new one's awesome too, I have no problem with her changing up the costume.
You know why they do this? I'll tell you exactly. This is me being a little bit vain, but they know that I'm going to buy a damn statue, and so they're like, let's change up the costume, so we force them to have to buy another statue. So there goes anywhere between $150 and $300. Thank you very much. But aside from that, I think like I said, bring on the casting announcement, bring on the freakouts from some segments of the fandom, because that's going to happen no matter who or what they do, because that's the state of fandom nowadays. Just be better than the Star Wars people, and don't harass the actor, don't force them off social media, please. Just come on, let's all be smart. Can we in advance of the casting, I just want to say, as fandom, all of us collectively, let's be smarter. This is a PSA. I just want to throw this out there in advance, because I know it's happened before, over and over and over again. So just, guys, let's learn from our mistakes. Remember Heath Ledger. Remember Ben Affleck. Remember, who else did they freak out over?
Gal
Gadot.
Hathaway.
Jared Leto.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you get the point. And the reason I'm pointing this out is because Margot explicitly said that they're going for diversity in front of and behind the camera. So fandom, prepare yourself for that and act like a mature adult when it happens, please. I'm begging you. That's all I'm asking.
Well, what I always say when it comes to casting announcement is wait till you see their performance to judge it. Okay, like that's the bottom line when it comes to that. So
yeah. So let's cross our fingers on that one. Absolutely. So
you know what it's time for, Adam?
Go ahead. Yeah.
It's time for us to talk about the Batcat wedding in issue number 50.
We could just get a clap track and not have you do that. And just
my excitement is off the charts. I reread it for the third time since Wednesday. I read it on Wednesday. I read it yesterday, and I read it this morning before we started recording. Yeah. And I was listening all morning. I was so excited about us finally getting to talk to this. I was listening to the Batcat Wedding playlist that DC curated on Spotify. I'm wearing my I just got a couple weeks ago a new Batcat T-shirt of the Batcat of the Batcat cover that Jim Lee did for the 15th anniversary deluxe edition of Hush.
Yeah.
So I am all ready for us to tackle this issue. I want to throw out a big spoiler warning here before we get into the issue.
If you haven't read the issue, my suggestion would be read it and then listen to this.
Yeah.
Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into this issue, guys. Let's get into this issue. And I really want to dig into this one deeply. So I'm almost going to have us go page by page as we tackle this, because there is so much to talk about with this incredible issue from Tom King.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Since I've got it pulled up here on my Comixology, I just want to talk about the beauty of the covers, of the main covers. So obviously they used a lot of the artwork in the issue as variant covers, and then there were a bunch of retailer variant covers in addition to that. But in terms of the main covers, we've got this is my desktop wallpaper right now, actually. It's the Batcat Kiss, the main cover by Mikel Yanin.
Okay, with, so you've officially changed your wallpaper for,
No, this has been my wallpaper for a while. This is what it was.
Oh, wasn't time. It the rooftop thing? I thought it was.
No, I'm sorry. The one, like, because I've got like a lock screen on my computer, and that's the rooftop Kiss from Batman: The Enemy Within.
Okay.
Then my inside my computer, once I actually log in, then it's this Batcat Kiss from the cover of Batman.
I got it. All right.
So. Anyway, we've got the cover by Mikel Yanin, who did, of course, the main story of this issue. Then we've got this cover of, which I think is really cool, of Batman like leaping out with all these bats behind him.
Yeah.
And then we've got the amazing two Jim Lee covers, which one of them is the sketch cover, and then one of them is the colored cover, and I think I talked about this on the show before, but this cover speaks to me so deeply, because what this cover represents, it's Batman and Catwoman embracing each other in the rain. And something that was established in Tom King's run is that back in I Am Suicide, which I'm going to bring up later in this issue, later as we go through this issue, because it ties in heavily to this issue. but it's the idea that when Batman and Catwoman are together, when they test, the respective pain of their pasts subsides. And so, to me, this issue represents that they were apart, and then they came together, and that they embraced because, like, their love for one another, them being together, it made the pain of their past subside, and they found each other again. So you see them there in the rain. You can't even make out. Like, it looks like they might have tears coming down their eyes. You can't tell whether all of that's the rain or not. And it's just such this beautiful moment. And Jim Lee's my all-time favorite artist. So I just adore this cover. What do you guys think about these four covers?
Okay, what I'll say is that I like all the covers. The one with Batman jumping out and the bats behind him, the background color and the bats, you know, engulfing him kind of thing,
reminds
me of the Batman Begins marketing.
I can see that.
I really love this cover.
And I'll point out, I really like, I don't know if you noticed this, Adam, I really like the way the utility belt looks on that cover.
Yeah, it looks cool. So I like that cover. The main one, what I assumed was the after I do kiss, is a cool cover. My only issue with it is that actually didn't happen in the book. It feels like a sort of what's the phrase I'm looking for? It's a very misleading cover.
But
it still looks great. There's no the 9 did look great. One of the things we definitely you always agree on, Jordan, is the amazing talent that is Jim Lee.
Yes.
the Jim Lee cover is the actual physical cover that I got. Mm-hmm. The colored one, obviously. And I, you know, to me, Jim, like I said, Jim Lee's amazing. Hush was probably my reentry point into comic books, or comic book reading, I should say. And so this cover is amazing to me, and I had the opportunity to sort of choose which cover I wanted, and I went with this one. So,
are you picking up those Walmart Batman Giants, Adam?
You know what? They're a pain in the ass to find. I've yet to find one. So I'd like to.
They're in. I don't know where they are at your Walmart, but they were hard for me to find at my Walmart too. I had to go all the way around the store. But they're where the trading cards are, near the registers at my Walmart.
Okay, I'll have to go take a look.
That's where I went and because, we talked about the news last episode that they were doing those.
Yeah.
And I went and I picked one up this past week. I went to Walmart. I also bought 3 Dark Knight Rises Hot Wheels. I bought the Bat, which is just so cool. And then I bought the camouflage tumbler, which I already had one of those from Batman Begins, but I got a Dark Knight Rise, which it's pretty much the same car. It's slightly different.
Yeah.
It looks the models look slightly different, but I got one of those, and I got Bruce's Lamborghini from Rises. Anyway, just a side tangent there. But anyway, the reason I'm asking you about Batman Giant number 1 is because they're reprinting Hush monthly in that. And that's cool. Something I'm really excited about because I have only ever read Hush in a trade. I started reading comics regularly in 2004 when the tie-in comic to The Batman Strikes, came out.
Okay.
And so, yes, I fully realized that at any point I could just open up my trade of Hush. Actually, I have 2 copies of the trade now because I got the 15th anniversary deluxe edition of with Batman and Catwoman on the cover. Well, she's on the they're on the cover of the regular edition too, but not, you know, not just the 2 of them together. Anyway, my point being, I realized I could just pick that up monthly and just read 1 issue per month and get that same experience. But it is a little bit different to actually be able to pick it up monthly in the store. So I'm anyway, that's the side tangent there, but I highly recommend Batman Giant number 1.
I mean, it's cool. It was cool to read, to echo your sentiments, it was cool to read Hush as a monthly story. And as I'm looking, as we're recording, on my wall, I have a framed a signed copy of Batman 608, the first issue.
Nice. Oh, that is amazing.
So I'm staring at it as we're talking.
That's so cool, dude.
But
is it the iconic Batman on the Gargoyle variant cover from the second printing?
It's the one where he's swinging and his boot. Looks like he's gonna kick somebody.
Yes, yes. Okay, the main cover.
It looks like he's about to kick a bird. So that's. I feel bad for that penguin, that emissary of the penguins that's gonna fall. All this led to was I chose the Jim Lee cover for my physical purchase. But Harry, what do you think of the covers?
I personally love them. I absolutely love them. That supposedly the After I Do moment cover is my favorite of all 4. I mean, I love Jim Lee, but them embracing like that in their suits, it's I absolutely love that. It's so well done, so well drawn. And I really like the one with, you know, Batman kind of jumping out at us with the bats in the background. And, you know, as I'm looking at the bats, some of the bats in the background kind of look like old variations of the bat symbol to me, which I don't know if that was intentional, if they were just like, yeah, let's just draw a bunch of bats. But I personally think some of them look like other versions of the bat symbol that have been on Batman suits before. And I found that really cool.
You know
cool.
What? Now that you're talking about it, I can definitely see that. Yeah.
See it. I'm looking at it now too. They're the one by Batman's right knee. There's one that looks like the Nightfall version of the bat symbol. The one, yeah, there's yeah. one under Batman sort of that looks a little bit like the Batman Beyond symbol.
Yes, yes. So,
yeah, yeah, I was thinking that too, yeah.
So I can totally see where you're, yeah, that is great, yeah. great find, Harry.
Notice the Batman and Robin symbol is nowhere to be found.
oh my goodness.
I just like to, I want to throw that
out. It can't be because there's also a Robin part of the Batman and Robin symbol. So it can't
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, I true. See one that looks like the Dark Knight Trilogy bat symbol a little bit, sort yeah. of like maybe an inch above Batman's head. It. I don't know if you see that one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see it.
This is a cool little hunt here.
yeah. I spent a while just like looking at all these. I'm like, oh, wow, that one looks familiar. That one too.
yeah. Yeah. They're all great covers. And you know what? I would have been tempted to buy all of them. The only problem is I just recently spent a crap ton of money on the Action Comics 1000 covers. so I was like, all right, I'm not doing this again. So I'll just pick one. But yeah. They're all great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, moving into the issue itself, first of all, I think it's so fitting that it starts with Batman and Catwoman teaming up to defeat Kite Man. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
For a couple reasons here. One, Kite Man is like, I feel like when King's run is all said and done, that's going to be like one of the most memorable little quirky things that he put in his run. I mean, he pulled... I mean, yes, when I say the quirky thing, it's the whole Kite Man, hell yeah, that's just hilarious. and so it's just this running joke throughout his run that's great. But then also, King pulled a Heart of Ice with Kite Man, and that's going to go down as a really memorable part of his run in the War of Jokes and Riddles, when he did, essentially for Kite Man, what Paul Dini did for Mr. Freeze in Batman the Animated Series, giving a very gimmicky, C-list Batman villain an incredibly tragic backstory that's just outstanding. So I think it's very fitting that Kite Man is here. And then I also just, anytime we see Batman and Catwoman working together and fighting crime together, I love it. King's given us so much of that, them really being just this crime-fighting power couple. And I think I just, every time we see it several points in this issue, and I just adore it. So
I get the similarity that you were talking about with Heart of Ice,
mm-hmm.
like in the sense that it's a tragic backstory.
Yeah,
but I don't think that this is, when all this is said and done, Kite Man is going to be anything. Like, I don't think he's going to suddenly get a surge in popularity like Mr. Freeze, and then upgrade it to a higher level like Mr. Freeze has. I just think, yes, King has similarly pulled off a tragic story and got you to sympathize with him, but I don't think it's going to have a lasting effect on the character's popularity. I think he's going to be relegated back to, unless King uses him again, he's going to be relegated back to like a, I wouldn't even call him a C-lister, more like a D-lister.
only time will tell, Adam.
Yeah, and I mean, personally, I feel, yeah, Kite Man's probably not going to be, you know, somebody who's, you know, amped up in power and notability, but I think he will be, you know, a memorable part of King's
sure.
run.
Oh, sure. He'll be a memorable part of the run. I'm just saying, I doubt it'll have the effect that Heart of Ice had for Mr. Freeze.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying, I get the similarities, I just don't think it's going to have that you know, triple, yeah. Not triple down.
Yeah.
The effect that had. So but I see where you're coming with the similarity, in terms of the storytelling. Go ahead.
I just want to say I think this is actually one of many callbacks to Rooftops. I felt the little Rooftops mini 2-issue thing earlier on in the run. I felt that this is, you know, the wedding issue in all was like very much calling back to several moments from the 2 Rooftop issues. And I felt that this was just one of the many callbacks to that.
Sure. Oh yeah. And I love throughout this issue, I'm going to try and point as many of them out as I can, but all the street names and buildings being named after iconic Batman writers.
Yeah,
so here we've got we've got Finger Tower. So of course calling to Bill Finger, which is awesome. And then I also love the other thing I wanted to point out on this page is Catwoman, or rather, that's perfect. Like, you know, I just love it. A little bit of this issue honors their whole history, and I feel like getting a little Batman 66 in there is very nice.
And I do like that. I do like that Finger was mentioned first, because of all the the legal you know, battles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Harry and I actually watched Batman and Bill together when it came out.
Oh, what a
great documentary. Oh, yeah, yeah. Such a great documentary.
It was so great.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, we went.
So tragic. Came out on, so tragic, too.
That's mm-hmm. very true, but I am so glad that it does end in an uplifting note, though, with, you know, him finally getting credit like this. Yeah. That we see in this.
Oh, yeah, but, absolutely.
But Harry, it came out on Free Comic Book Day in 2017.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
And Harry and I, we went to the comic book shop, and then we went and we watched Batman and Bill, so I remember that very vividly. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun.
So, one of the things I do really like that they did with this issue is that they used sort of like splash pages,
mm-hmm.
and that are worthy of being alternate covers.
Well, they are a lot of these are the other variant covers.
No, but I like the fact that they worked them into the book as just like a splash page, as opposed.
Yes,
to...
yeah, and at the end of this, at the end of our review, I'm going to have us rank our favorites. So, I know that's going to be difficult.
But I just want to say I do like the first one. And the reason why I like it is because it calls back to the
Golden Age Catwoman costume.
Yeah, but also the pre-crisis and when Batman and Catwoman did actually marry and have, you know, Helena Wayne. So that was her costume back then, and I can't see what logo's on his chest, so I don't know if that's that. Bat costume that he was wearing then, but it's definitely a callback to that era, and I like that.
I get a little bit of a Year One vibe from it too, with the smoke around Batman, like when he crashes Falcone's party in.
Oh, Year I can One. See that.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff there. Yeah. Definitely, that's a good point.
What I love most about this cover is the closeness between Batman and Catwoman here. There's a tenderness mm-hmm. to it. It's really beautiful just how close they are, just them in embrace like that. And it's really beautiful. You've got the cats on the bottom and the bats up at the top, sort of creating this nice blend between the two of them, sort of showing I guess it's this artistic way, you could say, of showing the what word am I looking for here? The combination. That's not the eloquent word I was trying to find, but you know that'll do.
Yeah.
With the bat signal shining behind the background. I mean, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. I mean, his art is just always blows me away. But like this, this is my favorite piece he's ever done. My goodness, is this gorgeous? And it starts like this is the whole thing. You mentioned it, Adam. The way this issue is broken up between the main story and then the love letters between Batman and Catwoman, and it starts on this page with Batman's love letter first, where he starts with Cat. And of course, I love this issue. I love this throughout King's run. It's so beautiful to me the way they were always referred to each other as Bat and Cat. It's so sweet, and I love that he starts his love letter like this. And it's a callback. You were talking. I actually mentioned it first, and then Harry, you were mentioning also how this calls back to the rest of King's Run, and for me, what I was calling out specifically earlier was the callback to I Am Suicide, and I Am Suicide is the arc where King introduced Catwoman in his run, and in Batman 10 and Batman 12, there were love letters back and forth to Batman and between Batman and Catwoman, just beautiful love letters, which. Catwoman even references at the very end of this issue. And so to me, it felt like a beautiful, such a fitting way to, I guess, you know, this whole, so much of the first half of King's Run has been building up to this wedding. And so it feels only fitting that the arc where he introduced Catwoman and then at the wedding, they both are issues that feature love letters between Batman and Catwoman. Like there's a very fitting like bookends to this first half of King's Run, which is just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the fact that even though at first you don't notice it, you do later on, but you realize that you are reading their letters to each other as we go along, and that's a cool way to break up the issue. I do like that aspect of it, and the fact that you have the main story and then you have the letters going along with it, and to use these kind of splash pages / alternate covers to frame, you know, the letter, I think is very smart, very cool.
I mean, not only are they love letters between Batman and Catwoman, but this whole issue reads as a love letter to their relationship.
I would agree, yeah. You can definitely see another one.
I mean, I said the same thing about Rooftops is a love letter to their relationship. Batman Annual number 2 is a love letter to their relationship. And here we're getting it. Oh, and Batman number 44 is a love letter to their relationship. And here is yet another one. So King is penning a love letter to the Bat-Cat relationship, just as Batman and Catwoman are penning love letters to each other.
The only thing that we disagree on here, Jordan, is the fact that you like the fact that they call each other Bat and Cat, and I can't stand it.
Please back me up.
But
I love that they use Bat and Cat for each other. I think it's adorable.
I knew I could count on you, Harry.
Hold on a second. Wait a second. I don't mind it here because they're private letters to each other. You get what I'm saying? Whereas where it kind of just for whatever reason irritates me is when they do it in public when they're, you know, in the midst of a, let's say, when they're in public or when they're in the middle of a fight, you know, they're fighting with each other, but they're referring to each other as that. For whatever reason.
Well, lots of couples refer to each other by their nicknames in public.
Yeah, I mean, it's the pet names for each other. It's just what they do.
My personal experience, I've never seen people, let's say at a store or in public, you know, I've never heard them refer to each other by their pet names. So to me, that seems weird. I get why some people would like it. I just don't. Yet here, I don't mind it because it's in the context of it's their letters to each other. So it's more naturalistic for them to use those kind of names, you know, in a more private setting. So here, as much as I usually dislike it, it works.
All right. Fair enough. I'll take it.
And I do kind of like I can't remember. Well, two things. The next page where, you know, where it starts Catwoman's letter.
Yes.
That image reminds me of the artist Matt Wagner.
Okay.
He has a very Matt Wagner kind of flair to it.
He's coming back to Batman for issue number 54.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
King's Run.
But as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, okay, this is very Matt Wagner inspired. And also
Darwin Cook, I would say, too, a little bit.
There's a little bit of cooking.
I can see that.
And it's also sort of reminds me of, there's an old, a really old, a much older cover of Detective. That I can't place the name, the number, issue number, but it reminds me of, it's Batman's, like, Batman's in the background, and, like, he's overlooking this castle on a cliff. You guys know which cover I'm talking about?
It's one of the issues with the Mad Monk.
This cover echoes that a little bit for me, personally.
Oh, I totally see that. It's the way Batman's eyes and cowl look. Yeah,
I see that. I think that also both of them look a lot younger in this cover, I feel.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of felt like all of these, they seem to get a bit older and older as, like, the covers went on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's like passing through time. Yeah.
Ooh, I did not notice the age looking like it passed. I'm gonna, as we go through this issue, I'm gonna see if I notice that on this going. If I think that it looks,
I mean,
like,
I personally felt that's what it looked like. I mean,
you know what was cool to me, the moment where the very next page when we're at Porky's bar, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. I was just going to say about this page, though, I wanted to mention before we skip to that next page, is I love how this sets up. You see Batman and Catwoman looking into each other's eyes, and that's so beautiful. I mean, you see, look, Selina's green eyes just look so beautiful in this image, and just obviously so much of their love letters is all, they're talking to, I'll get into it because I just loved it, them talking about each other's eyes and what they see in them, and so I feel like this image sort of sets that up, so.
Yeah. So the next page, as I was saying, was we're at Porky's Bar. And the reason I like that is because they've taken an element from the Batman Elmer Fudd special.
Yes.
And put it into main continuity. And
well, they already did it in Batman Annual number 2 also.
I know. But I'm still not convinced that's main continuity. I still think that's a mistake. and until anybody tells me otherwise... by physically proving it. Like, if King does it in an upcoming issue, then fine, I'll believe it. But for me right now, that's an Elseworlds tale. But what I like about it here is that I like that Batman Omer Fudd number one so much that I'm glad that this is now a locale in Gotham City, and it's a legitimate thing. And also the fact that the judge's name was Wolfman is kind of cool, because, you know,
Mark, well, he showed up already previously in the run too.
Yeah, no, but
he didn't show up actually. I think it was just, I don't think he actually,
he was mentioned, I think.
He showed up.
He was mentioned.
It was in Rooftops actually, when Batman had Gordon, Batman wanted Gordon to get Judge Wolfman to unlock some files, to find out, I think, about Holly Robinson, I think, what was going on.
Yeah, I think so.
But I didn't, back then, I don't think we reviewed that issue, so I wouldn't have mentioned it on the show. But since I didn't mention it, I think it's cool that the judge is named after Marv Wolfman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Then we get into the whole thing with Holly Robinson, I think it is. And so now she's being moved. I can't remember exact 100%. Is that something that Batman had arranged?
No, Catwoman arranged for her to be moved so that she could break her out.
Okay.
Because you see here, it's Catwoman's talking to her somehow right here, and she says, "You'll be moved to the I love this so much. You'll be moved to the 3-7 block along the way." Meow. It's just so. It's like such a way of like saying, "Okay, I'm gonna break you out then," but without saying it, you know. It's just, oh my god, I love that.
So she's probably there, but we just don't see her.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I wasn't 100% clear on that. The next splash page is really, well, first of all, here's where they start the callback on, you know, the sort of disagreement as to where they first met.
Versus Batman Year One.
That's been an ongoing thing. And
team,
so
Team Boat.
I'm fine with both because I really like Year One. But I also
I love the idea. Like, I don't think King is ever going to answer like definitively, and that's great because it respects both.
Yeah.
But I'm Team Boat now. Yeah. I love the way it plays out in Year One too. But let me explain why I am Team Boat though. I'm Team Boat because when Batman proposed to Catwoman, he used the diamond from the boat.
Yeah.
So to me that confirms. Yes, I realize that it's not really confirming it, but to me, it's like because of that, because I felt that was so special that he used that diamond, and because he did use the diamond, that's why I'm Team Boat.
Well, like I said, to me personally, I'm good with both, and I consider both, legitimate origins. I'm not the one that says, "Well, I was alive in the '80s, so that's the one I'm going with." I'm not that kind of. To me, it's all valid. It's all, you know, it's all part of the history.
No, I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, I love that.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying, I'm okay with both. Like, if they decided to pick one, I'd be okay either way. But I like that both are that Tom King does keep both valid. Personally, the image on this page, Jason Fabok, or however you pronounce his name.
I think it's Fabok.
Whatever.
Yeah, I think,
it's Fabok. Yeah. I don't think it's Fabok.
Either way, I told you I was going to mangle some names. Anyway, I really love this page for several reasons. It reminds me of, I guess I want to say it's 70s era Batman when he wore where he was predominantly in blue.
Like, it's Neil Adams.
Neil Adams. Yeah. Thank you for putting the name in my head. That's what I was thinking. I just couldn't place it. And to me, everybody knows my, again, I, whether it's there or not, I'm okay either way, but I do have an affinity with the yellow oval. So just seeing that again is really awesome. And again, so that whole like I said, the Neil Adams aspect of it, and it's a great piece of. It's modern art, but it's paying homage to the Neil Adams era, which is sort of the best of both worlds.
Well, Neil Adams has a cover as one of these pages later on.
Yeah, but
he does. Yeah.
But this particular artist, like when he did, there was a Justice League run.
Dark Side War.
Yes, he's great.
I agree.
And I think.
And he did some of the Button too.
Yeah, and I think he said in an interview that he bases, for the most part, his DC character designs on the movieverse actors. So I kind of like that he, you know, when he draws Superman, he has Henry Cavill picturing him in his head. So that, to me, that's cool. So I really like him as an artist. And then, you know, it fluctuates. The next page is then Catwoman.
Why do you keep skipping over page?
I don't know. Talk about this page then.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I totally agree with you about Neil Adams there with the Batman design, but then Catwoman here, the Jim Valent purple suit design, which is amazing. And it's so fitting because, of course, here, and I'm sure it was not a coincidence, but you've got Valent's is the building here on the left. So you've got her and her Jim Valent design with Valent's here on the left. But, I mean, the most important thing you skipped over, Adam, was the letter. Because here is, I mean, I know you talked about the boat part, but this is the end of this letter was where I started to get tears in my eyes.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Let me see here. It took 11 pages for you to start crying? I thought it was going to be page one.
I probably had tears in my eyes on the as soon as I opened the issue because it was such a long time coming. But this is where I really started crying because of how beautiful this issue was, which is when Bruce says, "Then I saw your eyes," because this just starts the whole this beautiful back and forth between Batman and Catwoman about what they see in one another's eyes, and on the next, now we can get to the next page, Adam.
Hold on, wait a minute. Ask Harry if he's got anything he wants to add about this page.
My bad. I mean, I don't have much to add. That I mean, you guys have already said a lot of it, but I mean, this just had a very nostalgic feel to me. I mean, it felt very classic, and it was beautiful. The costumes that they did for Catwoman and Batman were amazing. I love the coloring on them. And yeah, exactly. The line that Bruce wrote there, "Then I saw your eyes," that is amazing. It's such a tear-jerking line. And I love every bit about this page. It's one of my favorites of the variant covers.
Cool. Jordan, what I'll do is I'll start talking about the art, and then you can continue with the actual letter part.
Okay,
so the next page, everybody knows that I love Frank Miller, and I love The Dark Knight Returns. This is my least favorite, I'll say it right now, this is my least favorite page of this whole issue. This is Dark Knight Strikes Again art, and it's, to me, I hate it. I hate that. When he did Dark Knight Strikes Again, the art was so distractingly, and I don't mean to be rude, but so distractingly ugly that it took away from any enjoyment I could have had from this, from that story. And when you flip from the previous page to this, it's like, what the hell am I looking at? I detest this page with a passion.
Well, I love this page, Adam.
From an artistic point of view, let me.
No, I love it from an artistic point too. All
right, fair enough.
Because to me, it's like this. It's this like Batman here. He's hulking. He's obviously the Miller Batman. So he's hulking. He's brutish. He's huge. And then he sees Catwoman there standing in front of him. And it's almost like the way I'm picturing it is like she's. They talked about it in Batman Annual number 2. When she's talking about he tries to scare people with his costume or whatever, but I'm not scared. And then he's like, "I know," and she's like, "Do you know why I'm not scared?" "Yes." "Does that scare you?" "Yes, it does." You shouldn't be scared of a cat. Remember, everyone likes cats. So there was that. It was that whole exchange that I love so much from Batman Annual Number 2. And that's sort of what I'm picturing here, is him being this really, you know, bloody, intimidating version of Batman that Miller's Batman is. And then her just standing there in front of him completely unfazed, just like probably we can't see her face, but I'm imagining she's smiling at him.
I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. My thing is, if you're going to take artistic, you know, inspiration, if Miller's going to do his Batman, you could have pulled off everything you just said with something that was more akin to the first Dark Knight book. And it would have looked a lot better.
I don't think it looks... I mean, it's very stylistically Miller, but I dig it. I mean, obviously everybody has a different...
Yeah, just for me, when you talk about the Dark Knight universe...
Uh-huh.
The Dark Knight Returns art was still dark, menacing, and Batman was hulking. But mm-hmm. but to my eye, that looked more pleasing, whereas this does not. Just personal.
Okay.
Yeah, I get that. I personally have kind of love-hate feelings towards this page because I'm also a huge fan of Frank Miller. I love his writing. And from time to time, I love his artwork. I mean, the artwork he's done in Sin City and Dark Knight Returns is absolutely amazing. And then Dark Knight Strikes Again, not so amazing.
Yeah.
So I felt that this page was kind of simultaneously a hit and a miss for me because it brought across like all those things of like, yeah, he's the big hulking Frank Miller Batman, but he's like not scary to Catwoman. But it's also Dark Knight Strikes Again art, so it kind of ruins it a little bit.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
In terms of the letter, then, my goodness. I mean, I love how Catwoman, first of all, well, I guess I'll call out the first thing that I was sort of tying as a parallel to the last page, of course, which is when Batman says, "Then I saw your eyes," and Catwoman has the same reaction, "But then I saw your eyes." And I just, oh my goodness, again, like it's so beautiful. But I just, one thing I love is how well Catwoman understands, this is going to be a theme as we go through this letter, talking about how well they understand each other. And here, Catwoman talking here, trying to save Holly, really trying to save everyone. And it reminds me of a line from Gotham, actually, where Selina says to Bruce, when she says to the Bruce clone, when she says, she calls him out because she's like, he's trying to save just her. And she's like, "You know how I know you're not the real Bruce? Because the real Bruce would try to save everyone." And so,
I remember that line, yeah.
You remember? Wasn't that great, Harry?
Oh, it's such like a chilling line. And oh, yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And this reminded me of that a little bit. So I love how she's talking about how she thought she had this idea of who he was, like another man trying to assert his will, trying to lord over a world he doesn't understand. "But then I saw your eyes." And it's just like that changed her perspective on him. And she's like, oh, that's not, I mean, we get to it in a second when she says, they're not what they, well, I guess I should pull up the page so I can do it verbatim. They're not what they should be. And so, oh, so freaking beautiful. But do you guys want to talk to elaborate more on this letter before we get to the next page? Because
I'm good. You said everything. I mean, more than what you said.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about the letter.
Okay, cool. Well, moving on to this next page. Okay, first of all, more of Batman and Catwoman teaming up to work together to fight crime, which, again, I love so much seeing them fight together. But I also love another nod to former Batman creator Jerry Robinson, because they're on Robinson Boulevard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then we get, okay, for me, I don't know, you guys probably aren't thinking the same thing, but the way I read Tweedledee and Tweedledum's dialogue is, if their voices sound like Scrappy-Doo from the first live-action Scooby-Doo movie. That's the way I hear them in my head.
You know, I never really pictured them having the same voice, but now that you brought that up, I can totally see that. Yeah. Like, that is like the perfect voice for them.
Yeah, I could see that. I'll hit you. I mean, I never ascribed the voice to them, just because I don't have a definitive voice in my head, but now that you said that, I could see that.
Or he'll hit you, it actually is, but yeah, not I. Yeah. But yes. Yeah. Right? So that's what I thought of.
And it's funny, because they look like Kingpin to me.
I can see that too.
But yeah, Scrappy-Doo. All right. Then we get to the Bermejo page. I'm such always a brilliant one. So blown away by so much, all the intricate detail in Bermejo's art. It's just amazing. And particularly, one thing that's always stood out to me, particularly about Batman Noel that he did, was
I love that book.
Oh, it's incredible.
By the way, that's our next Christmas episode. I just want to point that out.
Oh, yeah. I think I suggested that to you last year that we do that this year.
Yeah.
So I think we already had that in the plans.
Yeah, well, I know. Now that I'm looking at the art, I'm just reaffirming, I'm reaffirming those plans.
But yeah, but here we do get a little bit of that architecture. So that's one of the things that's always impressed me most about his art is the architecture, and we get a little bit in this scene. But just, I mean, Batman and Catwoman both look incredible here. Yeah. So his art, and then in terms of the letter, of course, really emphasizing Batman as a detective. And here it's the same thing that Catwoman, she thought she knew him. Like she was talking about how, oh, like I was saying on the last part with her letter and him, he's talking about, oh, I by the time I captured you, I knew you, where you'd been, what you'd done, who you were. But then he says the part, when you looked at me, when I really saw you, your eyes, they're not what they should be. And so it's again emphasizing that. And I just, oh, it's so freaking beautiful.
One of the other things I want to talk, because I won't go into the letter too much, you've covered that. One of the things that really stands out to me is the detail in, you were mentioning it. I mean, Catwoman's costume is very detailed, looks great, and it looks, you know, very much like what we're used to with up until Catwoman number one, at least. But the interesting details are the way he draws Batman's costume. There's a practicality to it that's more evident because of the details.
I don't know if you've ever heard Bermejo talk about why he draws Batman that way, but I was recently listening to Batforce Radio had him on on their show recently, and he was talking about that actually, that he always wants to draw Batman's costume as if it could be something that he wants it to feel like it could realistically be made.
Yeah, because it looks like leather. It's almost like a leathery kind of look.
Yeah, I see that.
With some armored
like
bits to it.
Yeah, like you. I mean, you see the stitching in it, and I mean, in some of the pockets on you know the front piece, like underneath the bat symbol, and the kind of six pack that was made, like you see as if like there was like a plating of some sort that was stuffed in and it was sewed down, and it's incredible the amount of detail.
So it's great. I think like if you ever like, and they probably, who knows if they ever will, at some point in one of the movies they will redesign the costume. I think this would be an interesting look.
To put that would look great in live action.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. This would look, just when I looked at it, I'm like, oh, wow. And I know it's not the same, but I kind of got a call back to with the Catwoman part of the image. For whatever reason, I got a call back to, remember Batman Returns when Michelle Pfeiffer was in her apartment?
Yeah.
When she first steps towards the window in the Catwoman costume?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I guess because she's by the window and there's the cat there, I got Batman Returns sort of flashbacks.
Only thing missing is her Hell Here sign.
Yeah. But
I could see that. Yeah.
It gave me those kind of feelings.
Oh yeah.
I had feels, as the kids would say, Batman Returns. much to many people's chagrin, but I don't care. I like that movie.
I love that movie.
Oh, it's a brilliant, brilliant movie.
All three of us are in agreement on that.
Yeah, I'm just talking to the listeners out there who don't like that movie. I really don't care if you do or not. but yeah, next page. Anybody else with this page, or are we moving on?
We can move on.
All right, cool.
Alrighty. Well, now we already got Jason Fabok's Neil Adams homage page, but here we get Neil Adams himself's page.
You know what's interesting about this page, at least to me?
What's that?
It doesn't look like Neil Adams. Like, it's not...
Well, it's not even his bat costume. That's it's what, not his bat
suit. Yeah, it's true.
But it doesn't have the earmarks of, like, if I'm looking at it, like, without looking at the name, if I just look at this with just no knowledge of who it is, I wouldn't be able to sit there and say, okay, that's a Neil Adams piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. Actually, I think I could be wrong. But the Batman costume in this image reminds me so much of the Batman the Telltale Series bat suit. It looks so similar.
Yeah, I see that too, yeah.
So I don't know if that was the intention, but the way the bat symbol looks on it, the way the utility belt looks, it reminds me a lot of that. The way his like abs look almost in it reminds me of the Batman Telltale Series suit.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the other thing it evoked for me was them up on this gargoyle thing. It reminds me of Batman number 24 before the proposal, when Batman's talking to Gotham Girl about wanting to be happy.
Yeah.
And they're up on that like cell tower overlooking Gotham City. And it evoked that for me a little bit. So can we talk about the letter?
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is where Selina brings up the idea of, you know, what different eyes mean, what you can see in them. And she has her version of the line, your eyes, they're not what they should be. And throughout this letter, I love how like on the same page Batman and Catwoman are, like they're saying very similar things to one another. And it's like, I think that's beautiful. I think the next segment where they really get into the analysis of each other's eyes. So I'll save that.
Yeah.
But Harry, did you want to add something about the letter on this page?
Not really, but it was. I personally think like Selena's just. Her words about this are so true. I mean, I think this is true past comics too. Like, you know, the eyes, you know, they always tell you something. Mm-hmm. And like, that's always the thing to pay attention to. And I like how, you know, she just needed to look into his eyes and she knows, you know, like who he is. And like, she knows that she's not, you know, in danger or anything. And
well said, Harry.
Yeah,
I'm with you. So then we get Catwoman taking Holly to Wayne Manor, and we get an interesting retcon here, which is that Holly knew Bruce's identity too, and Selina did as well from the very beginning. If we go the street route, from they knew it from the very first time they saw Bruce in Batman Year One, or rather, the first time they knew it once they saw Batman in action as well. So that's an interesting. Revelation there, because we were talking about whether Hush is still canon, or at least the part where Batman reveals his identity to Catwoman. Now this is confirmation that it is no longer, that part of it at least is no longer canon. And so, like, because in Batman Annual number 2, when Catwoman knows his identity, this explains how she already knew it in Batman Annual number 2, which is that in this version of the continuity, post-Flashpoint and now into Rebirth, the way that she learned his identity was actually from Batman Year One. So I think retroactively, next time I go back and read Batman Year One, I'm definitely going to keep that in mind and read it that way, because I think that's awesome. This new, I mean, I love the way it plays out in Batman Hush, obviously, but this is a cool retcon there. And I would also say that I love her dialogue with Holly here. I think it's really funny, but I especially Holly's line at the end, where she's like, holy, this is his house? Selina, this is your house. Like, that was just, it's so, because I do love it. It's so true, because, like, well, I mean, we'll get to it later, but at this point, I mean, yes, Catwoman going through with the wedding, I mean, this is her house too now. I mean, we've seen her, she's been living there, obviously, we've seen in Batman for a while now, but, like, this is her house. She's at Wayne, and I just, as a huge Batcat shipper, like, there's something very special about, like,
I don't think you have to emphasize huge. I think people know by now.
Okay, that's probably true. But I just, I love it that they're just to get acknowledgement that like this, Bruce and this is Bruce. This isn't Wayne Manor. Well, it is still Wayne Manor, but this is Bruce and Selina's house now. It's mm-hmm. you
not
know that,
not quite yet. Obviously.
Well, yeah, like I said, we'll get to that, but I'll explain to you why I still say it that way at the very end when we get through everything in this book. But but yes, I love that. So, guys?
What I'll say is, excuse me, as long as the events of Hush, you know, still happened for the most part, I'm okay with this quote-unquote retcon. So that's part of the thing. The other thing is, Holly's reaction was great and very much, you know, sort of a normal reaction to have, you know, the first time seeing Wayne Manor. And so I liked it. It was very funny.
yeah.
And then the other part of it was that the reason why you're sold on that reaction as a reader is the facial expression drawn by in the artwork here. I mean, it's great. It's so detailed, her expression.
Oh, Mikel Yanin, his face, the way he draws faces are just, and I think there's several moments later on in the issue where he's, the way he draws faces are so pivotal to certain moments really working.
Yeah.
And his art, my goodness, is he phenomenal. Yeah.
No, it's great.
Do you remember that page from the War and Jokes and Riddles where he drew the Joker trying to make himself smile in the mirror?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It really stood out to me there, yeah. So, Harry?
Well, I mean, I kind of love that in the last, I think, it's the last two panels of the page, is Catwoman's slight smile as Holly's reacting to the house. And I just love that. Selina's just like, yep, it is my house.
Yes!
I just love that.
Yeah.
Great point. this is what you get with Comixology. I don't know if you guys ever have this, if you read anything on Comixology, but sometimes certain pages won't load. So I can't see the next page, but I've read this issue 3 times now, so I sort of have a memory.
I've never had that problem on Comixology. I love Comixology. I love the guided view because it enhances what you're seeing, right? Like the imagery.
Yeah, I love, listen, this is not a knock on Comixology. I love Comixology overall. This is the only issue I've ever had with it, but sometimes I just have to, for some reason, that one
page. Even they know you're trying to read it too much. They're like, again?
Well, yeah, this is now that I'm going through it now, I mean, I'm not reading it like I would normally when I sit down and read a comic, but this is the 4th time I've gone through it since Wednesday, so, but usually I just have to close out of the comic and reopen it, so I did that, now it's working again. So we get Batman and Alfred, there, and a lot of the main story at this point has transitioned to a point where we get the first page, because obviously it's split up 2 pages, then 2 pages, and 2 pages, and so it's goes back and forth between Selina and then Selina and Holly, and then Bruce and Alfred. But I love, first of all, Alfred here, his design, the way Mikel Yanin draws him reminds me a little bit of the way he looks in Batman Ninja. I try to
ignore that as much as possible.
Have you seen Batman Ninja, Harry?
No, actually, I haven't been able to get around to it. Although I loved it,
but Adam does not feel that way. So I'm very eager to hear your thoughts when you do watch it. But Harry, I gotta let you know there is some great Batcat stuff in it. So
awesome!
That is something to look forward to when you do see it. But I think
I like 2/3. If I remember correctly, I like 2/3 of it, and then the ending just. For me, it crapped itself, but
Well, anyway, first of all, the only thing missing from that scene is that Bruce was eating a sandwich instead of eating Bat Burger.
But
it would have been great if we got
another. You're talking about the comic now? We're back in the comic?
Yes, sorry. Okay. But actually, I just remembered, they have sandwiches at Bat Burger, too, because they have the KGBLT. So maybe he's eating a KGBLT. Well, so actually, I take that criticism back because I'm... It wasn't really a criticism, obviously. I was just saying it would have been cool if it was Batburger. But I'm pretending this is Batburger now. Or that's my headcanon.
What I do like about this image is the fact that it's so... Eating a sandwich is such a everyday sort of occurrence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to see Batman eating a sandwich is so rare. Like, it's something like, you know, how many times, how many comics since 2003 have I read? Batman comics since 2003 have I read? You know, and aside from him being at the burger place a couple of times, I don't think I actually saw him eating it. It was just there.
Mm-hmm. No, remember he was. They were all making fun of him because he would cut a burger with a fork and knife.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
It's still, even in spite of that, it's so rare to see, you know, Batman eating, because he's always, I gotta work. I'm too busy. I'm too busy. Right. So.
Petit soir in Batman Returns.
You know, there should have been some of that. There should have been a nod to that. I think they.
Yeah.
With petit soir.
Yeah. I thought it would have been, if they would have done it, like in the scene, I thought it would have been a cool nod.
And he said, "This is cold, Alfred. It's supposed to be cold." So.
And also, I do like the fact that whenever I see Alfred. You know, his hair is a little bit more gray than white, but it reminds me so much of Batman the Animated Series.
Mm.
And whenever I look at this iteration of Batman, drawn by this artist, I see Ben Affleck. So
I see that. Yeah.
Ever since the cover to number one, I think it was number one. Yeah. I've seen this iteration of Batman. It always reminds me of Ben Affleck. So
the cover to number one.
To Batman number one.
David Finch did the first cover for the Rebirth series.
Did he?
Yeah.
He did maybe a variant, but I got my cover has this artist on the.
Are you sure? Yeah. To Batman number one from Rebirth.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
What does it look like?
Which cover do you have?
For Batman number one?
Yeah.
From Rebirth?
Yeah.
It's got Batman and Gordon and Duke and
I have a different cover.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's just Batman's like face, like his mask, basically. It's him. It's his face with the cowl on. And when I saw that image, I'm like, it looks identical to Ben Affleck as Batman. So... Ever since.
Oh, I do know which. Wait, oh no, you're talking about the Rebirth. I'm sorry. That they did actually. It was a little bit confusing because they had the Rebirth one shot for Batman, and then they had the actual.
Oh, okay, which cover am I talking about?
You're talking about the Rebirth one shot.
Okay, whatever the hell, whichever cover it is, that's the one.
I'm sorry.
It's DC's fault for that timing. Rebirth this.
It is a little bit confusing.
Make
up
your mind. What is it? but yeah, that's just my last comment.
I guess. No, that is a great cover. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so that, that was my last comment.
I love Bruce's line about the wire when Alfred asks him why a rooftop, and Bruce replies, "It's where we were, where we'll always be."
Okay.
What's that?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
And I just love it because it's true. I mean, so many iconic Batcat moments have happened on a rooftop. I mean, the proposal happened on the rooftop. There was the whole rooftops arc. And it's just like, it's very, and of course the iconic, the most iconic Batcat kiss of all time, the one from Hush, was on the rooftop.
Yeah.
So it's so fitting there.
Yeah.
What were you going to say before I'll
save it for a little later. I'll save it for when I get to my negatives.
There's negatives in this issue?
For me,
I was unaware.
For me, there's a couple things. Yeah.
Huh. That's very profound.
Harry, you got anything else to say about this page, or are we moving to the next one?
I think we're gonna move to the next one. I don't really have much to say on this one.
Cool.
Actually, I do have one slight negative about the issue, so I will have one thing to say to negatives.
I'll say, as a Batcat shipper, I'm a little. There's a negative to this.
That's exactly what I was going to say too.
That's one of my negatives. Despite the fact that I'm 50-50 on King's Run, That is one of my negatives, but I'll elaborate more on the other ones as we're going.
But even with that, I have I don't completely entirely see it as negative, so I'll get
into
that.
There's shockingly not too many negatives. I think there's two for me, I think.
Okay. All right.
The next page is kind of cool because for two reasons. I like the artist.
Tony Daniel, yeah.
One of my favorites.
And
when he drew that, I think back then he was drawing Detective, was he not? He was the first one to draw Joker with that mangled, ripped off face.
Yeah.
Oh, that freak! Mm-hmm. That was so disgustingly awesome. but I love his art, and I love the way just everything about this page. I like, it's so sleek, it's so modern, I just love it. The colors.
It's incredible.
It's a great page.
I love the way I've noticed something about Daniel's art, which is how he draws Catwoman's ears on her towel as being sort of like
it looks more
bendable.
Like, but it also looks more like a cat. Like it's specific.
Yeah, yes, that's a great point. I love it because we saw it in. He drew it the same way when he drew the Pfeiffer costume.
Oh, what a page! What a page!
In the Booster Gold.
I love that page.
I'm not talking about the page you're talking about is amazing. The reveal page. I'm talking about the page though where Catwoman is actually the cover, I believe. Where Catwoman is like jumping forward and like Booster Gold's behind her or chasing her or whatever.
It's just her in that whole costume. It's just such a callback to the good old days of my youth that I just.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. But you were thinking I was referring to the reveal page.
Well, she was in the whole every part of that arc. She was pretty much in that costume. So I'm good with all that stuff. Yeah.
So anyway, I love the way he draws Catwoman's cowl, and then I love it. I love the subtle detail here in the background with the hearts, the smoke in heart in heart shapes coming up.
Oh
behind.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that at first, but
I didn't notice that at first either.
So that's really cool. And then the letter.
Yeah.
When he talks, really the thing, he's talking about the color in Catwoman's eyes, how it's got all these colors, even though they're green, it's got all these other colors in them. And, but before it really comes into green, when you like look at it from afar, but when you get in close, it has all these other colors. And then he says, it's a war of colors. No, not a war, a dance. And to me, there's some symbolism in that because, it's Batman. Basically, the whole idea is this was established sort of in Batman in Rooftops, in Batman 14 and 15, where Catwoman's the one person who can get Batman to stop doing what he feels compelled to do, what he has obsession, a compulsion to do, which is war on crime, and do what he wants to do, which is peaceful. It's loving. It's a dance with Catwoman, essentially. And so that's how I saw the symbolism of Batman's letter here. He's not talking about the same thing here, but he's talking about, when I see your eyes, it's not a war. No, it's a dance. It's love rather than my obsessive war on crime. So there's something really beautiful there in the symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, Harry?
I guess more to the that line with the, you know, the war of colors versus the dance of colors. I also felt that there's so much, you know, violence and brutality in their lives, but then it's within her eyes that there's peace. There's, you know, it's a dance of colors. It's all peaceful and quiet.
Yeah.
So like it's kind of, I suppose, maybe him, you know, finding consolation with her and in her eyes.
I couldn't agree more, Harry. That is freaking beautiful. Yes, I'm with you. Then we get, I love this cover, the next one, because it's just such a fun one of Batman and Catwoman at the Gotham Zoo together. And here's a Hush nod. When Batman reveals his identity to her in Hush, there's a tiger there in the zoo at the back, in the background, in the cage. So this is a Hush, I think. With the two tigers here. So
I never put that together, but that could be true. That could be purposely done. Although I will say, personally, I'm not a fan of Amanda Connor's art style. So this page doesn't really do anything for me.
If that, yeah, I mean the just the way that Batman's face looks kind of puts me off. It is. And his eyes look especially strange to me.
You know what it reminds me of? Did either of you used to watch Heroes? Okay.
Yes.
Remember when the artist guy used to go into his trance and he had the white glazed over eyes?
Well,
hey, I Smallville, why don't you call back to something DC, Adam, with Smallville, with John Glover, when he'd get possessed by... Actually, cover your ears, Harry.
If he hasn't watched Smallville by now, is he really going to watch it?
No, he's watching it currently.
Yeah, I'm currently watching through it.
He's on season one.
I'm still in season one. It's a bit of a slow progression through the series.
Do you have headphones in, Harry?
I do.
All right, take them out. That was the first thing that... Heroes, I'm like you. Smallville is not always on the tip of my tongue, Jordan.
In case any of the listeners aren't thinking of what I'm thinking of, take out your headphones for 10 seconds, Harry, and I'll say the spoiler and then put them back.
All right.
What I'm referring to is when Lionel gets possessed by Jor-El. Yeah. And Yeah. So anyway, that is what I was thinking of.
All right, Harry, put them back in.
Yeah, you're good, Harry.
All right.
But no, I love Amanda Connor's art. I love that variant cover she did recently with Batman and Catwoman at the movies together. So I love her page here. I love her work on Harley Quinn. I think Amanda Connor's great. But anyway, getting into the letter here, though, this, my goodness.
It's so well written. I mean...
Tom King, I want to know if he writes love letters to his wife like this, because he's always talking about how he takes so much inspiration from his own marriage when he writes Bruce and Selina, and I think that's so sweet, and it really comes through. Like, I mean, I feel like it comes through that he is in love in this much of a way like that, because that's how he writes Bruce and Selina, and it's beautiful. But he, the way he writes this here with Selina talking about Bruce's eyes, and she's talking about how pure blue eyes only boys and girls have them. Like, once you get older and you're not as innocent, like you get other color, like they're flawed. Your eyes become flawed. But she says Bruce's eyes are still they're pure blue. She says, I look and I find only blue. She says, I should read that whole part. I search for the flaws. They must be there. They have to be. I look and I find only blue. And that's so beautiful because, later on, obviously, in this, I'm going to bring it up later on in this issue, but back in I Am Suicide, Bruce was talking about in his letter there how he, or maybe it wasn't in his letter, maybe it was in one of the issues besides Batman 10 and 12 when it was just his inner monologue. But in any case, it was the whole thing where he essentially... basically Tom established the fact that Bruce tried to commit suicide when he was young after his parents died, and then he decided, wait, no, actually I need to do something more heroic. And essentially he did suicide not by killing himself, but by becoming Batman. And that was his suicide, was he gave up his own happiness, and he decided instead of trying to be happy in life, he realized he was never going to find that, which obviously was wrong because he found Selina. But yeah, he gave up his own happiness to war on crime, and he was like, I'm going to dedicate my life, instead of trying to be happy, to making sure other people can be happy. So that's my suicide, essentially, is what he was saying. And so sort of it's like he died that night when his parents did, and that night she only finds blue in his eyes, because he hasn't lived since then. He's still that boy in that alleyway. And so that's sort of the way I read this. And so that's the way I read it anyway.
I definitely see that, because, I mean, the line, right, for boys, girls have pure blue eyes, is it's the flaws that come with life. Mm-hmm. But if he hasn't been living, then, you know, there's not the flaws.
You know what I'm saying, Harry. Thank you. Yes, thank you. You vocalized that actually even better than I was able to. So, yes. Anything else on this page, guys?
I'm good.
No.
Alrighty. Then we get Selena in the beautiful wedding dress that Joelle Jones designed. Oh, my goodness. I love this. And Selena, like, a really human moment where she's, like, worrying, like, oh, I shouldn't have gotten something so complicated, and, you know, maybe I should have gotten the other dress. So it's really a humanizing moment there, a relatable moment there. And, of course, in the Engelhart bedroom, another nod, of course, Steve Engelhart, the Batman writer from the late 70s, who did a very iconic run. So, I love that. And, you know, Holly saying, you're lovely. Let me just say amen to that. That page, Mikel Yanin, I mean, wow. Selena looks absolutely stunning in that wedding dress there. Wow.
I mean, yeah, the page looks great. And I like a couple of things that you were mentioning, something, you know, a very normal human concern, or, you know, whether the dress fits and how it looks and stuff. So that's, you know, it's very, like I said, it's a putting, you know, these characters in very real world situations and having real world feelings. So that's cool. In terms of,
It definitely adds another dimension to them.
In terms of the artwork, what I really noticed in this particular page was Selena's eyes and how they almost had a cat like sort of feline look. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see that.
That really stood out to me for some reason, and so I just thought I'd point that out. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got for this particular page. I don't know,
Harry.
No, I don't really have anything else for this page.
Well, then we move on to from Steve Engelhart to Jerry Conway, because we go to the Conway bedroom. And Bruce, you know, conflating to Alfred, like he hates his tux. But Alfred with a really funny line about him wearing a molded leather bat suit as he performs Feats of Astonishment and saying, oh, he'll be fine. Bruce's line, I look like my father, and Alfred saying, you most certainly do. Man, that was...
Oh, I love that.
A great line.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys notice this at all, but again, to me, this was sort of a, again, it's not exactly the same scene, again, you'll see why when I get to it, but it reminded me of Batman Begins, when Bruce comes in after trampling the cop cars with a tumbler, and, you know, he's getting dressed for his quote-unquote party, and Alfred's talking about the importance. He's got to be mindful of what he's doing because he's dishonoring his father's name and such. It reminded me of that in a way, because, you know, obviously the mention of his father, but it's also that, you know, Bruce has sort of matured and gotten to a point where he's accepted that becoming more like his father is not, it's a thing to be accepted and to be embraced. And the reason why this scene in the comic could fit in the Dark Knight trilogy is because we see how Bruce and Selena end up in that trilogy. So I think...
Yes!
I think that this scene could easily fit in that role as well. So I guess the callback... My callback to Batman totally Begins kind of makes more sense now that I rationalize it. But yeah.
I could totally see that, because there's this amazing fan-made music video.
I think
video,
I said that to you, right? Called Postcards from Italy?
You sent it to me. I'd seen it before you had sent it to me. But yeah, I believe you did send that to me at one point. I just posted that as part of Batcat Week, actually, for my favorite Batcat fan fiction or like alternate fan take or whatever. I think I incorrect quote fan headcanon or fan fiction, I think, was what the category was called for that day of Batcat Week. But I just posted for that because it's sort of kind of set after the events of The Dark Knight Rises. And it part of that video deals with Bruce and Selena coming back
to Gotham for their wedding. Bruce and Selena came back because, what's his name, John, not Robin Blake, screwed things up.
Don't even lick your... John Blake is the best Robin.
Yes.
Okay, I don't even agree with that.
Brett,
one.
Look, Brett, I've seen a picture.
He's the best Robin because he takes from Dick, yeah, Jason, Harry, and Tim. Yeah, no, he's an amalgamation of three.
Ignore the guy
prattering
in the background there. I can definitively say I haven't seen a lick of footage, but just by, and I'm not even meaning look, but, well, I sort of am, but just by looking at a still, I can guarantee you that no matter what Brendan Thwaites does, it'll be better than whatever the hell John Blake was.
I think I'm going to agree with that. All one, right, yeah.
Hey, on. Well, when we review The Dark Knight Rises, Ryan Haas is going to come in here and back me up.
Back me up all you want. It won't change my mind.
John Blake. At least, Harry, though, you love John Blake, though, right, Harry?
Yeah, I think he's great. Yeah. It's just I don't like to consider him a Robin, really, of any kind. Like, I think, like,
Robin.
Him being a sick. Well, yeah.
He's an amalgamation.
Let me ask you this, Harry.
Yeah.
So The Dark Knight Rises ends with the presumption that this imposter is going to take over as Batman, correct?
Yeah.
Based off of everything he did in The Dark Knight, which is get his ass saved two or three times by Batman. Do you believe that this guy could take over the mantle of Batman? Because I don't. He'll be dead in a...
Terry McGinnis got saved by Batman.
Yeah, but Terry McGinnis,
had
Bruce Wayne to instruct him. And to teach him
true.
The ways of Batman.
I mean,
what was offered? Like, did Bruce Wayne leave? You know, like a Tai Chi or equivalent, like a, you know, those workout videos, Tai Bo. Workout videos on how to be Batman, because John Blake was an ineffective comp. How could he?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say if somehow John Blake had like an Alfred or somebody like that, maybe he could do something well as successor to Batman.
He was a detective like Bruce. He was a detective. Because he's the one who figured out the thing with the they weren't actually mixing cement with that truck, and he was the one that Gordon trusted and promoted. And he could have trained. Like, the presumption was that he was going to train more after he, you know, got
by
access
himself?
To the cave. Like, he wasn't.
Yeah, true. Who's going to train him?
The movie does not have to answer
Alfred?
Every single. Maybe Bruce was going to send him somewhere. Because, like, Bruce, obviously, the only place we really saw Bruce training was with the League of Assassins, who had been, or the League of Shadows, I should say, in that continuity, that had been disbanded. But there's enough implication, I feel like, that Bruce had trained with other people across the world before that, because he knew how to fight. Even before he had trained with the League of Shadows, if you remember in Batman Begins, he was able to take on all those thugs in the jail he was in by himself. Like, so much, he was so good a fighter even before that, that they separated him from those thugs for the thugs' safety rather than Bruce's own safety. So the presumption was that maybe there's other people that are not evil, like the League of Shadows, that Bruce knew across the world that he could have sent John Blake to and said, here, go train with this person. Just like, to tie it back into Tom King's Batman run, Bruce sent Gotham Girl to go train with somebody in Europe. Back in Batman number 24, he told her, I know a guy in Europe that you can go train with. So that could have been where he sent John Blake.
Could have, should have, but the implication is we're not going to see that. So based on what they gave us in Dark Knight Rises, I don't think that guy could succeed Batman at all. I think he'd be...
Maybe not yet, but if he trained some more, like, he had the pieces there.
Yeah,
okay,
he
was active, he was a cop.
You're reaching. And at the end of the end
no,
of
I'm
the
not
day,
reaching.
As somebody who trains in martial arts, he'd be dead in a week if he went out on the streets of Gotham. I'm just saying.
He's not going to go out there the first week, probably. He's going to go train first.
Bruce left it with somebody that was capable as a cop / detective or whatever. He may have been able to go out right away, but... He's not, so he can't. Mm-hmm. Moving on back to this issue. But
ridiculous.
Yeah, well, John Blake is ridiculous. What's next?
So we get the Raphael Albuquerque page with essentially a take on the famous Spider-Man kiss, which I thought was great.
Oh, yeah.
But I think this is great. I love the art here. I know... Adam, you're not a fan of Raphael Albuquerque, but I love his art. and I love this. The Bruce's this is the start of something in this part of Bruce's letter. This is something that I really want to talk about because it's one of my favorite parts of the letter, where Bruce, this part of the letter emphasizes more than anything how well Batman and Catwoman understand each other, because Batman starts talking about he knows why. Or he starts talking, you know what, I'll actually save it a little bit longer to talk about this, because at this point he only talks about the fact that he can always see Selina's eyes in all her costumes. Mm-hmm. It's the next part where he talks about why that is, where I really want to delve into that. But anyway, this is the start of that.
I'm personally, you said it, Jordan, I'm not a fan of Rafael Albuquerque's art style. To me, this looks like, Amanda Connor's artwork and anime had a baby, and neither of those two things are on the top of my list. So it just doesn't. I mean, I like the implication, you know, the play on the whole Spider-Man scene. That's cool, but the art style just doesn't work for me. But Harry, is there anything you wanna?
Actually, I think I might comment on the art style. I mean, I think it's definitely not bad. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but I think it definitely has, like, a couple good parts to it. I mean, for one, I like the way that Selena's headpiece is designed, the way the ears look on there. Mm. And, I mean, I think it's like a, you know, the way her costume's drawn is done really well. I do think it's a little funny to me the way, you know, she's making a kissing face and Bruce is just stone cold face and not doing anything. But yeah, I mean, yeah, and then the lines of, you know, I can always see your eyes. I think that's such a heartwarming line.
Tom King writes freaking poetry. I mean, it's freaking poetic the way he writes. It's unbelievable to me. So we move on to this Andy Kubert page, which is another nod to Golden Age. Especially with Catwoman with her costume, and Batman's, I think, is sort of it's very Golden Age inspired to Silver Age. Man, this is I love this page by Andy Kubert, because you see Catwoman just looking into Batman's eyes and the way she's smiling at him. I mean, you can just see in Kubert's art here the love she has for him there. It's freaking beautiful. I love the way that their capes are flowing. I mean, and here is Catwoman is the ultimate survivor. DC just did a video, a versus video, about where it was, they do their versus videos every Friday where they pit two DC characters against each other and figure out who would win. And it was Catwoman versus Green Arrow. And one of my justifications for why Catwoman would win is that they're both her and Green Arrow are both survivors. But Catwoman, she had to survive in the roughest city in all of the DC universe, Gotham City, as an orphan with no money, and she had to survive like that. She is the ultimate survivor, and that's what we hear her talking to Bruce. I want them to know me, to look right at the cat Gotham tried to put down and understand that she's still here. Whatever you do, she'll always be here. That is those four lines, I guess, right there are the epitome of who Catwoman is as a hero. And it's one of the reasons why she's my second favorite fictional character of all time, only behind Batman. She is the ultimate survivor, and those four lines describe it so well. And what we're about to get to in a minute, which I'll talk about, is how, you know what, I'll save it because I want to talk about it on the next page in terms of the letters page on Bruce's part of the letter. So I'll save that for that.
You mentioned, Jordan, about, you know, the page looking very Golden Age, you know, in terms of style.
Yeah.
It very much goes hand in hand with the first splash page / alternate cover that we saw. But it also reminds me of that episode of the Batman where it shows, you know, the Earth 2 Batman and Catwoman scenario.
You're thinking of Batman the Brave and the Bold, Adam. It's the episode Knights of Tomorrow. Yeah. It's my favorite episode of Brave and the Bold, by the way.
It very much echoes that as well for me. And I, And I really like, which Q-Bert is this? Adam or Andy? I'm not even sure. But yeah, okay, Andy.
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 Yeah, it is Andy because it says right there. Never mind. Anyway, I love his artwork, and I believe he did the first, the Batman and Son arc that introduced Damian way back years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was one of Grant Morrison's arts that I actually like. I have a love-hate relationship with the work of Grant Morrison.
I liked everything in that arc except for She Who Will Not Be Named.
You mean Talia? I'll name her.
She's in my mind, she's Voldemort. Yeah, wow. She's She Who Will Not Be Named.
It's okay. So I really, there are multiple levels. I love this page.
Certainly you can't name her on an episode where we're dedicating to.
I can name whatever I want. It's my love of Batman. The whole thing. I can do whatever I want. If I want to bring the color range randomly, it won't make sense. But I can.
And guess who has editing powers?
You can dig it out. I'll just keep saying it. you can forget I can log in and just put it in the description over and over and over and over and over again, right? So you might as well leave it in the one spot and not get bent out of shape over it. But this image and the other image, you know, the first page made me think. I actually read. You see, it made me long for this, and I don't know if I'm the only one. But I wish that DC would make more use of their multiverse. And what I wish we could see is a book, either monthly, bi-monthly, however you want to do it, set in the Earth 2 continuity or the however you want to phrase it.
Well, there was Earth 2 Society.
I get that, but I'm talking about like a Batman book where we see, you know, more of like, I would love more of this, seeing more of this, you know.
Oh, are you saying like a Batcat book in that continuity? Because goodness, dude.
That would be amazing.
Oh my goodness, I might pass out.
I think it'd be cool because you have the whole, you bring back the whole Huntress idea. Like, I loved that Earth 2 book, right? When it was in the New 52. And
that might be the best idea you've, not to say that you haven't had great ideas before, but that's the best idea I've ever heard.
In general, I just think, I wish this page and the other page, I mean, wish that DC made better use of their multiverse and tell stories from that universe. Like,
if DC did that, goodness.
Look, I'll make it even easier on them. If you don't want to do a full-on book, instead of telling, you know how, because some of the, in some titles, they have those filler books where a creator has to take a break, and the story is utterly meaningless. Instead of doing that, why not take that opportunity to tell a story, you know, a Batman or a Superman or whoever the character may be, story from one of your multiverses when you have to do a filler issue. At least it'd be more entertaining than meaningless filler just for the sake of, well, we need one of those, our regular team needs a break, so let's just put something out to fill the monthly quota. I'd rather take that than, you know what I'm saying? So some variation on that idea, I think, would be cool. So, but yeah, that's what this page got me thinking.
Oh my goodness. I can't get over this idea you've thrown out there.
At least I know what can be done. So I'll use it on I'm like, remember that idea? I know, just
if we got a book of them raising of Bruce and Selina raising a family together on Earth 2 with Helena, oh my goodness. But here's the thing, Adam. I think we're gonna get that on Earth 1.
That's the bit we'll
on the Prime Earth.
Here's the thing though, like with all of that, there's actually kind of two directions they could take with having Bruce and Selina raise the family. And one, it would be a terrible idea, which is making it an entirely just family comic thing where it's just like, we're just raising a family.
That crap.
Yeah. but it's like, I mean, you could definitely use a lot there, because then you could also have, you know, the villains who know that Batman is Bruce, and then they could go after his family. Or at least, I mean, everyone knows Selina Catwoman, so they just have to go after her.
Sort of like William, sort of like with William on Arrow, where
Amy
Dark and Prometheus and I think even Caden James went after him at one point. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But do you guys remember the Brave and the Bold episode where they had the Currys sitcom with Arthur and Mara and Arthur Jr.?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was so funny. I would not be opposed to that with Bruce and Selina.
Yeah,
and
I don't know if I want to go that far. I want something more serious and more media. But
mm-hmm.
Sure, I want something more serious too. I'm just saying, I would still be all over
to
that.
Me, just to me, I think that's an idea. The point being is, I hope and wish DC would do more stuff with their multiverse. Because...
Well, just like the name of our show.
Well, I think it sets them apart from Marvel. Whereas, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, play on that. Use it more than you are.
Next up, we get to my favorite page of the entirety of the main story of this book. I can't say it's my favorite page, period, because of the... I'm saying just of the main story, not including all the guest artist pages.
Yeah.
My goodness. Here we are in Fox Hall. So there we go. Mm-hmm. A nod to Gardner Fox. And this page just represents Bruce and Selina's love for one another so, so well. I'm pretty sure I stared at this page for about 10 minutes when I first saw it. Because it's Selina and Bruce, like, they... Selena's telling him, like, no, we shouldn't, you know, because he's seeing her in her dress before the wedding day, which you're not supposed to do, or before the wedding, on the wedding day before the wedding, which you're not supposed to do. And they're, even though she's saying we shouldn't, like, she's still walking towards him, he's still walking towards her, and just their love for one another is so strong that they can't even resist coming up to each other and embracing each other and kissing. And I just, my goodness, this page showcases Bruce and Selena's love for one another so well. I mean, my goodness, is it?
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
well,
well that you're stuttering.
So well that I'm
stuttering. Yeah, I mean, this, I think, I kind of feel that if no other page does, this page alone should bring tears to your eyes. If no other page does, yeah, this should be the one to do it. And I also kind of feel that, you know, yeah, this is them seeing each other, you know, before the wedding. It's bad luck to see the bride in her wedding dress before the wedding. And then it kind of makes me think that, oh, you know, this is bad luck. This causes the bad luck that causes things to go so horribly wrong by the end.
Look, it's an amazing page. It's great. And it's certainly packed with a lot of emotion. And this was the actual page where I thought, okay, this wedding is legitimately going to happen in this issue. Like, there was no...
Mm-hmm.
Whereas up until this point, I'm like, okay, something's going to happen that screws this all up. But once I saw this page, I'm like, okay, they're actually, you know, even though I'm, you know, typically 50-50 with Tom King, the way he writes them as a couple, I was like, okay, this is going to happen here. And there, I got to give credit to DC for actually having the balls to go through with this. So the bait and switch, right, didn't even cross my mind at this point. I was fully believing that it was going to be, all right, this is happening. But it's a stunning looking page for sure.
Then we get to the Tim Sale page, which is just amazing, and it's so fitting that he had a page in here, especially because he did so many of the variant covers for Tom King's run so far, and also, of course, he drew two books that had some amazing Batcat stuff in them with The Long Halloween and Dark Victory, and also Catwoman Win in Rome, which is one of the greatest solo Catwoman stories ever, which also had a little bit of Batcat stuff in there. So it felt very fitting that he had a page in here, and a little bit different than most of the guest artist pages, because this is actually like a sequential little story being told in here, mm-hmm. and, you know, Catwoman pulling Batman up here. But here's what I wanted to talk about, really, with this page, which is what I was talking about before. So Catwoman was talking about before in her love letter, before we got to that big page of Bruce and Selina, she was talking about the reason she chose people her eyes with her costume is so that they can look at the cat that Gotham tried to put down and understand that she's still here. And what I love mm-hmm. about Bruce's letter here is that he's saying, and obviously they haven't read each other's letters yet at this point, he's saying the exact same thing that she was saying to him, which to me just emphasizes how well they understand each other. The fact that these mm-hmm. two people would describe in the exact, like not exactly the same words, but so close to verbatim what the other one said is just emphasizes more than anything how well they understand each other. The cat that couldn't be, he says, I know why you let them look. They glance, see the green. Then you surprise them, probably kill them, maybe steal from them, which is exactly what Selina said on the previous part. You leave and they have their story about you. They tell all their friends, which reminded me of Batman 89. I want you to tell all your friends about me. So mm-hmm. the whole world knows. The cat that couldn't be put down, that won't ever be put down. It's all in those eyes to them, cat eyes. And again, as a huge Catwoman fan, with her, like I said, being my second favorite fictional character of all time, and getting this message that just epitomizes what I think is so, so great about the character of Catwoman, her survival, her mm-hmm. as a survivor, just this quote, it gave me chills to hear both Selina see it, and then to hear Batman say it, like, wow. And again, like I said, emphasizing, again, just the understanding, how well they understand each other. They understand each other better than anyone. And it's beautiful.
The one thing that I realized from this page, and maybe it's because it came after such an amazing-looking page, I'm very 50-50 on Tim Sale's artwork.
I agree. I love the way
he draws Catwoman. Oof. It's great. Mm-hmm. But I love The Long Halloween and Dark Victory. But on this page, where he draws Batman, before Catwoman enters the picture, it just looks, I don't know what the word is, weird, awkward.
It looks great. It looks great.
I would agree that it looks very strange. I mean, to begin with, it has the very long ears on the cowl, and I'm not a huge fan of when they're that long. But then in, like, the panel right before we see Catwoman, the head looks so strange. It does. And then that? even in the panel where we have Catwoman, I mean, you see his mouth, and it's just drawn so weirdly.
Yeah, it's drawn very, like, I get that that's the role that Catwoman's using, but it looks like the way it's drawn, the way that, I don't know, it looks like he's just horked out God knows what out of his mouth. And his head looks weird.
he's getting a rope tied around his neck.
Just the way it's drawn, it looks weird. And I get what you're saying. I don't mind it.
Yeah.
It depends.
Can we at least agree on the picture of him crouched there on the gargoyle, though? Because
that looks amazing.
The one where it's kind of like in shadow. But and in terms of, it's funny, Harry, because what you're saying about the long ears, I like them mm-hmm. when, you know, Batman and Batman Returns, even, you know, Batman Forever was cool, the long ears.
Yeah.
And then Clooney's cowl didn't fit him properly. That shows you how much they give a shit about that production. But there's another artist that draws Batman with really long ears. It's
Kelly Jones.
It's terrible.
What?
It looks terrible. And so I'm 50-50 on the ears as well. That's another debate that I'm 50-50 on.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you not like Kelly Jones, like vampire Batman stuff, like Red Rain and?
Well, again, it depends. It varies with, much like with Al Morrison. I'm 50-50 on, right? With Kelly Jones is the same way.
You've said you're 50-50 on a lot of creators.
I'll tell you what, I love Jim Lee, love Alex Ross, I love Michael Turner. Michael Turner also does the, let me see if I have a Michael Turner. Well, no, they're medium-sized ears.
Yeah.
It all depends. Like, even Frank Miller, I love Dark Knight Returns, then Dark Knight Strikes Again. Looks like a 5-year-old drew it. So I don't know. It just depends. To me, it depends. I think Kelly Jones's vampire stuff, where it's vampire Batman, works better because it's the whole vampire thing. I don't know. Maybe it adds to the look. So it generally depends on the story being told. But.
Okay. Well, then I think it's brilliant that they put this page next to the Tim Sale one, because Paul Pope.
Yeah, similar vibe. It's like, I would agree that Pope is sort of like a hybrid of Frank Miller and Tim Sale.
I agree with that.
One of the guys on I was listening to Bat Force Radio and their review of this issue. They said this. It's so silly, but it cracks me up, and I love it. They said Paul Pope, his art is so dope. They should call him Paul Dope instead of Paul Pope.
Yeah, I think that's trying too hard. But all right.
I thought it was funny. Anyway, but I love this page. And it's Catwoman. I'm talking about Batman, and she really describes him so well too. This is something that the BOF guys pointed out on their review of this issue, which is how well. Again, I think this just goes to show how well Tom King understands both these characters. How I was talking about how the line before was such a great explanation of what makes Catwoman such a great character. Here we get such a great explanation of what makes Batman such a great character. The Dark Knight, the Caped Crusader, the world's greatest detective. Again, Tom King does such a great job always of honoring all the different versions of Batman history, and here we get it with various versions of his nicknames. So, and then Catwoman goes on, a man whose power is, he's the best he can be at everything anyone can be. He's not like us. He's better than us. That scares them, yes, but it also comforts them. And because he's better than us, he will always be there. As each night returns, so shall the bat. And that reminded me of The Dark Knight Returns or Batman Returns, because then we get Forever, and that reminded me of Batman Forever. Yeah. So I think that might have been a nod there in the writing. And forever we shall be saved. I mean, how freaking poetic is that? I mean, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. The writing here is so well done. But I think the art style distracts me a little bit, because in the panel where it starts off with the various nicknames, and then it's, a man whose power is blah blah blah, that the way that their heads look is so strange to me. It doesn't look natural in the way that the heads are drawn.
And it's what I think makes it more obvious is when it goes back and forth to the main art of the main story, and how well that's drawn, and how awesome everything looks there. It points out some of the things that I'm not fond of certain artists even more. Like, it makes it like, look at her, like, even her fingers. It's like, is she 90?
Well, no, I like that because it emphasizes, like, your hands would probably look like that if you were running on rooftops and fighting look at what they go through. It was in the Batman Gotham by Gaslight animated movie, where Selina's talking about to Bruce, and she sees his hands, and she's like, these are the hands of I can't remember exactly what her line was, but she notices like his calloused hands, and I felt like that was it makes sense, I feel like, for that to be the case.
I mean, her hands just seem to go into not entirely, but some of like the uncanny valley of comic drawing. It just it looks like realistic, but also really strange and not. So it just kind of creeps me out.
Okay, well, I still think Paul Pope's art is dope. Paul Dope. But whatever. I don't know what to say. Then we get back to Selina and Holly, and this is where my heart starts to break. My Batcat heart.
I knew it would at some point in this issue, and I was just. Yep. We had bets going on when.
I mean, this is definitely where it all starts to fall apart. So.
Yeah. first of all, we're back in the Englehart bedroom, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And then Holly, obviously later on, we know she's being manipulated here. Mm-hmm. Or she's part, and maybe even not, she's not being manipulated, but I should say Selena's being manipulated here. Holly may or may not be being manipulated. But she has that line about, he always seemed to need his misery, you know, like it was mm-hmm. how he did what he did. And Selena, again, this is one of those places where I was going to talk about where Mikel Yanine's facial expressions really mm-hmm. sell a moment, because you see Selena, the look on her face there when she says, what?
Oh, yeah.
And Adam?
Yeah.
Selena is a hero.
Well,
this is the first time I've dropped an F-bomb on this entire
podcast. Hold on a second. Let me get to that moment. I'm
going to start talking about it here, because this is part of it.
I'm going to wait until it gets to that moment, and then I'll go into it.
Selena sacrificed her own happiness
mm-hmm.
for what she thought was the greater good of Gotham City.
Mm-hmm.
She's a hero.
Yeah.
And
I would agree with that.
In this moment, I agree with you. Because she's done something, like you said, sacrifice her own happiness, her own well-being, for the greater good of someone or something else. Now, she, in my opinion, mm-hmm. she's deserving of that moniker, of that name.
Mm-hmm. Yes! So, Adam, you finally agree.
No, when I think it's warranted, I'll say what it is. But beforehand, when she steals the wedding dress, and, like, I don't think... Look, Catwoman's always been a character in comics and in other media where more often than not, she is doing things where she's on the side of whatever serves her best. She has been for a lot of independent. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. She, like,
at the end of the day, she does the right thing, though, Adam. But helps
you can't
people.
Call, like, if you're going to come forward with villains and steal and do that, you can't call someone outright a hero, but in this moment...
No, she is outright a hero.
Yeah, now going forward, I'll consider her that. But beforehand, I'm sorry, I don't. I consider her and a hero. Sometimes yes, sometimes... Or whatever the... Is that the right terminology? Saying... Okay.
Yeah.
Beforehand, she was more an anti-hero, where it could go either way, depending on what served her purpose. Here... She's fully deserving of that moniker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree with you here, but I one of these days I'm going to convince you that in general.
There are two things that you won't convince me on. That John Blake is a good character. That's number one. And number two is that before this, that Catwoman was an outright hero. It's not gonna happen.
Speaking of John Blake, you want to talk about the Dark Knight Rises when she takes the bat pod and she blows the blockade open and then she goes back.
What did she get out of it? She got the clean slate thing, and she got to be with Bruce. So on some level, she was doing it for her own happiness.
Adam. Moving on. Unless did anybody else want to say something about
Gary,
about
am
this?
Am I wrong? Am I wrong? On some level, Dark Knight Rises.
Please back me up.
I mean, I would say that Catwoman. I mean specifically in Dark Knight Rises, Catwoman definitely had, like, you know, there was an interest in, you know, getting the clean slate, and she did want to save herself, but I would say possibly to a point she also wanted to help other people. I would say maybe it's a bit of both for the Dark Knight Rises.
Jordan discounts that possibility entirely. I'm not saying her coming back and when it was not a heroic move, but there was also a portion of it that by in doing so and ending up with Bruce Wayne and she got what she originally desired, which mm-hmm. was a clean slate. Which was the original proposition he brought. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying yes, there are heroic moments in that movie where she does heroic things, But you cannot call her an outright hero in that movie.
No, she is an outright hero.
No, she's not.
Yes, in that movie, yes, well, she's an outright hero. You have a
very colored perspective on Batman that is very heavily biased. But moving on.
Anyway, moving on.
Well, actually, so I do have a quick thing about this page. And it is in, you know, Holly's line of he always seemed to need his misery, like is how he did what he did and all of that. And the very first time I read it, and I'd say a little bit in the rereads of this, is I actually would agree with Holly a little bit here. Because, you know, and I kind of felt shades of Mask of the Phantasm here. Because, you know, in the flashbacks, you know, when Bruce is going to get married and that he's like, oh, I can have a normal life. It's okay. And he's going to get married. So, you know, possibly in this, you know, if he gets married to Selena, he might be like, I can have a happy, normal life. I don't need to do, you know, like I don't need to bother with being Batman anymore. So I kind of actually like I could see where Holly was coming from. But now knowing the ending, I'm also thinking, I don't know if I agree with her anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's an agree and disagree. There is an element to the agree and disagree. You can be on both sides of the debate. And we've had instances where you see it because in a way, Batman does have his extended family, right? He's got why am I forgetting his son? Damian. He's got Dick. He's got Tim. He's got all those. But it's. More often than not, we see that family dynamic dictated by the mission that they're all a part of. So we really don't get a sense of is he capable of, and it's part because I don't think DC will allow it. Where if he's going to be truly happy with Selina as the way this story wants to imply that he could be, he would have to pass on the mantle.
I kind of feel that it'll be the end of Tom King's run when Bruce is finally happy and gets to like truly be with Selina. I think it'll be the end of his run, but that's what will happen.
If they do that, right? Do you think that he's gonna pass on the mantle and then? Because I don't see DC ever letting that happen.
I think. He would pass on the mantle.
I don't think that's necessary.
I don't think that's necessary. Look at it. We've already seen before they were married, Batman and Catwoman working together, even in this issue, as a crime-fighting power couple.
I don't think they're married. Pass on the mantle, but I think,
Well, we know he is temporarily in the next issue.
I'm talking about something more long-term. He's done it before.
Sure.
But it's never a permanent thing, and I don't think DC would ever allow it to be a permanent.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think that it would be a permanent thing. I think they would find some way to split up Bruce and Selina permanently, semi-permanently.
I mean, I don't know if I should just what I think is going to happen. All right, and then. Even though we're not at the end yet, but I think there will be a coming together of Bruce and Selina as a couple. But I think a formalized marriage, the way it was set up to be here, is now off the table. They'll say they're together and they're a couple, but they won't formalize it and it won't be as, you know what I'm saying?
I'm going to wait to debate you on that until we do get to the end because it ties into the end.
That's the end game. Right. That's what.
But I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait to debate you on it until then. I'm gonna wait.
All right.
But then we get to this very touching Alfred and Bruce scene.
Oh, I love this scene so much.
Oh my god. If I remember, I was saying before that I felt that Dick should be the best man because Alfred feels like more of a father figure to me to Bruce, and Dick feels like more of a friend. But in this scene. Tom King sold me on why it should be Alfred. So now I'm fully on board that it should have been Alfred, and I'm glad it was. Because, man, Bruce telling Alfred, I can't do anything without you, really. I never could or will. It's been us. It's been the two of us since the beginning. I mean, my goodness. Mm-hmm. And just Alfred, the look of, again, Mikhail Yanin with the facial expression here. That scene of, it's in the second part of the page, that first of the three panels, where you see the look on Alfred's face before he goes and sits down and hugs Bruce, like, man, just an amazing father-son moment between Bruce and Alfred. My goodness, was that beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, like, I mean, looking at, like, Bruce's face in those panels, it's like he doesn't think of it to be a big deal to choose Alfred. Like, it seems like he's always thought it always should be Alfred. Like, he's the one who's always there. And Alfred's just, I mean, he's, you know, overcome with emotion there. And, I mean, I just love these, the family moments between them.
One other thing, whereas if you look at Dick and if you look at Tim and whoever else, they've all gone off on their own little way. At some point, they've all tried to break away from Bruce, right, and be their own man, do their own thing. Alfred has always been there from day one, and his support of Bruce has never wavered. So
he did leave in Nightfall.
Well,
just saying.
Okay, yeah, that is. I mean, yeah.
I'm not saying that takes away from it. I'm just saying there is one.
But if you tally up all the different times that Dick has deserted him and Tim is, you know, deserted him, and this it's far more prevalent for those characters than it is Alfred.
Yeah, and even to be fair, even when he left in Nightfall, it was because he, well, it's somewhat similar to Selina leaving Bruce here. He's trying to do something good, and in this case, in Nightfall with Alfred trying to help Bruce.
Whereas Dick and all them want to go because they want to be their own man. They want to be their own person.
Yeah.
It's more self. What the hell is the word? Self-beneficial, if you will, them leaving him. So, so that's why Alfred. To me, Alfred is the logical choice.
That scene sold me on it, and man, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we've got one of my favorites of the guest artist pages, because I never thought we were gonna get another scene from Rooftops, but now we get one more little glimpse into that amazing magical scene from the end of Batman number 14. Of Bruce and Selina making love on the rooftop. And my goodness, is this incredible. You see the jewels that she spilled all over the floor that she was talking about before, that she wanted in Rooftop. She was talking, she wanted Bruce to donate them for the orphanage because when she thought she was going away. You see the bat signal shining there in a night sky. Oh my goodness. God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a callback to that, you know, that moment. And also, if you want to go further, it's very reminiscent of the new 52 Catwoman title, kind of, sort of. I think it was issue one of that title.
Well, that wasn't on the rooftop.
Okay, right. But I'm just saying there's a similarity. There's a kind of connectivity.
Yeah.
And it's cool that it's by, at least I think it's by the artist who does Tom King's Miracle Man. Yeah.
Mr. Miracle. Yeah. Mitch Gerards. Well, he did Rooftops too. And he did the Swamp Thing issue of Batman. And he did, I think there was, I'm trying to think. I thought there was one other one of Batman that he did.
No, but I know more often from the Mr. Miracle stuff. So,
And he did Sheriff of Babylon with Tom King too.
I've never read that.
I've never read it either, but I know that was like their first collaboration. So
yeah.
Tom King considers Mitch Gerards the greatest comic artist out there.
I would not agree with that. I mean, just like in Rooftops, like the way he draws Bruce's face is unsettling to me. And, like, it's less unsettling in this page than it was in Rooftops, but it's just, it's a little strange to me.
Well, I don't personally think he's the greatest, but he's certainly up there for me, so I certainly wouldn't argue Tom King for that.
Yeah.
He's not in my...
I mean, I would put him in my top 10, probably.
He'd be somewhere outside my top 10, personally, but that's just me.
Anyway...
I'm not saying it's a bad piece of art. It's a great piece of art.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. I wasn't saying it as like wasn't saying that I agree with King or I disagree with him. I was just saying King personally considers him the best.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, then we move on to a nod to the Super Friends arc with Batman and Superman with their double date with Selina and Lois. And, oh, man, this one just made me smile. This one just put a big, fat grin on my face. Because I just, my goodness, I love this. And Selina, I got to talk about Selina's dialogue here, because this is really, I mean, I was sobbing at this point reading the issue for the first time. I mean, just Selina talking about the boy in, because there you are, not the flawed hero, but the boy in pain, the boy longing not to be alone. The plea of, please, someone help me. Just be there. Be here with me. And no one comes and you head out into the night. And it's just this idea that Catwoman is the one who can finally, like I was saying before, when they're together, when they kiss, the pain, that pain does go away. And so she's the one. And that's what she's, I mean, she's realizing that here. That's the reason why she feels that, because of Holly's manipulation, that's why she feels that she needs to leave him. She needs to make that sacrifice. And I'll talk about that in a sec, but God, it's beautiful writing, but it's heartbreaking writing. And the image on the page gave me a big fat smile, and the writing just made me sob. No, but tears of sorrow.
Yeah.
Two things: she has Batman pretty much, like, that's it right there, right? If you wanted to sort of get an idea of Bruce and what's going on in his head, she's been dropping it down the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that, and this page emphasizes that. But just on the, one of the arcs that of Tom King's that I'm absolutely fond of is the Super Friends arc, and you can attest to that, Jordan.
And I'm right there with you. It's amazing.
I love this arc, and it made two things. It made me long for a proper Batman Superman title, because that was another book, the one by Jeff Loeb that was part of my re-entry into comic books. So if I got another book like that back, I'd be over the moon. And it also reminds me why I love the Super Sons book, because it does catch a little bit of that spirit and that dynamic. Just a couple of things that it called to mind for me, this piece of art. So.
And you see, it says World's Finest there in the top right corner.
Yeah, so in my opinion, why don't they just, they should just have, you know, I don't know if they get Tom King to do it. Like, see, if they could get this creative team to emulate what they did in that arc, but in an ongoing book, I would, sign me up for that too.
That would be amazing.
Well, Tom King is writing Superman in the Superman Giants at Walmart, so he will be writing Superman, which is exciting. He wrote that one just incredible story from Action Comics 1000, but he'll be writing Superman on an ongoing basis.
Hopefully, that's exciting. Thing. I know. Thank God that they've rebranded it, but they're bringing it back. The Super Sons book. Have you? By the way, side note, have you read that, Harry? That book.
No, it's really fun.
It's great. It's a great read. I recommend if you get a chance, check it out. I recommend it.
All right. Yeah.
So then we get to O'Neill Avenue, which of course Danny O'Neill. Nice nod there.
If they didn't make a nod to him, that would have been a missed opportunity of the highest order.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. So good for them.
Yeah. And it's O'Neill with an IL, so we know it's not a nod to Steel from 1997.
Why do you bring that up? Tequila. Everybody and their mother is trying to forget that piece of crap, and you keep bringing it up.
or he was in Static Shock, too, so it's not a nod to that either. Just thought I'd point that out. So anyway, this scene, yes. So Selina asks Holly, am I a hero? And Adam, again, yes, the answer is yes.
In this issue, she very much is.
here's another example of Mikael Janin with his facial expressions. I didn't catch it the first, like, I didn't think of anything of it the first time I read this, but look at Holly's face there when she replies. Does that not look sinister or what?
It really does, yeah.
I only caught it on a second read once I knew what happened at the end, but yeah, and then
she kind of looks like she's going to turn into the Joker in about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
But anyway.
Again, it just underscores how amazingly facial expressions are drawn here. Because, sure, you can read the words, but they're even more powerful when you have the visual to match. And he captured it perfectly, so, yeah.
So then we move to the Ween Expressway, and rest in peace, Len Wein, but a great nod to him.
Mm-hmm. He created Wolverine, too. And... Just throw that out for And I think he's Canadian, or he was Canadian, which I am, so it's... cool, but go on.
Anyway, I just this is, you know, Bruce, I really like this, him talking about I wrote her a letter and we never have time anymore, and I really like that, because obviously, and Selena said it, I forgot to mention on the last page, she said I hadn't written to him since Arkham, which of course referring to the letters that they wrote to each other in I Am Suicide. And I just, man, Bruce asking Alfred, can I be happy? I mean, it's just, this scene just, it broke my heart. Even, I mean, it was already starting to break here, but just even more, just like, it's a heartbreaking scene, but like.
It is kind of funny, just because I'm imagining it in my head. When you say your heart's is breaking here, I can't get the Simpsons episode out of my head. When he's, I think it's the Halloween episode, when the girl pulls his heart out of his chest and kicks it to the wall. As I was reading, I'm like, this is probably Jordan's reaction the whole time.
I don't think I've ever seen that episode of The Simpsons.
I'll have to send you a clip, and you can tell me if that.
Yeah, send me the clip. Because
I actually pulled it on Twitter, and I said, this is Jordan right about now.
Oh, I probably couldn't see it because of my Twitter lockout.
Yeah, you're still banned for that illicit bad cat material you were posting. So.
Oh my goodness, don't even.
But yeah, go ahead, continue with it.
Oh well, I was throwing it over to you guys.
Oh no, me, Alfred, you know, reiterating that he deserves to be happy again. Underscores Alfred in just about any other media that we've seen him in, where his whole thing is, when are you going to, he's trying to move Bruce towards that direction, whether it's
he's a bad cat shipper.
If you look at whether it's the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy, whatever the hell you pronounce that, or it's the Dark,
and God bless trilogy. Alfred and the Burton. God bless Alfred and the Burton Schumacher quadrilogy. He had to write a dirty limerick in order to help Bruce and Selina there.
whether it's the Burton films or even those Schumacher ones, the point of whether it's in those, it's accepting family, right? It becomes accepting more people in life. And then in the Dark Knight trilogy, it's always been, okay, but this needs to be temporary so that you can move on and live a normal life, right? And so,
He definitely ships Bruce and Selina there. But I love that scene too of him where he talks about, you know, the iconic cafe scene where he talks about his dream of seeing them there, and then at the end of the movie he does see Bruce and Selina there.
So this is very much consistent with everything Alfred has done,
and he's been a Batcat shipper, I would say, in Tom King's run too. I love that.
He is, but does he really have a choice? I mean, look, it's either get on board with this or you're fired, right? I think at that point, I can see that happening. Either you get on board with this, or else, what's Bruce going to do? Not defend Selina in front of Alfred? So it's either get on board or get out, right? Mm-hmm. So he better be.
Yeah.
But
Bruce would never fire Alfred.
He's done it before.
Unless it's...
He has done it before.
He has, in Batman Return of the King Crusaders.
A game of how many times... Like, we could start a drinking game of across Batman media. I think we're going to do this from now on, every time we get to one.
I mean, he did it in Gotham.
He did it in The Dark Knight Rises.
He did it... Here's the thing. He didn't buy... Alfred left in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's true. Alfred did leave in The Dark Knight Rises.
No, he did not. Alfred...
Yeah, true, because, I mean, Alfred had that whole speech. He's like, I'm not going to bury another member of the Wayne family.
Bruce
so,
did not
I mean,
kick him out at all in that.
Yeah, that was pretty much on Alfred for that.
Something to the effect of, if that's how you feel, you should leave or whatever.
No, he said goodbye, Alfred, when Alfred had already said, but that was after Alfred had already said that he was leaving. So
yeah.
That's definitely not counting. But I would say Gotham counts, but that was like a young, insolent Bruce. So like that's different, I would say. And then Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders, Bruce was under manipulation. So I don't think that really counts either. But there's that scene from it doesn't count if he's not himself. Adam. In Gotham by Gaslight, the animated movie, Selina has that line when Bruce jokes about firing the doorman. And Selina has that line. She says he's too kind to ever fire anyone, is what she says to Bruce. And I love that. So I would say definitely not Alfred.
But the cool thing, again, about the art, you can almost see the pain on Alfred's face, because it seems like to me that he knows where this line of questioning is. Like he senses that there might be some doubt in Bruce's mind, and you can almost see his heart breaking, because he's like, "Oh no, are we gonna go here? Is this gonna happen again?" You know what I mean? So, just the facial expressions are again. It's really something to just marvel at. No pun intended. But yeah.
So. The next page we get is Ty Templeton's page, which Ty Templeton was, of course, the artist on a lot of the Batman animated series tie-in comics, the Batman Adventures. And recently he came back to do writing for – actually, he did a lot of writing, too, I think, for those. He did the writing, I know, for the recent Batman and Harley Quinn tie-in miniseries to the animated movie. But here's something that's very funny to me about this page. He drew Catwoman in a look very similar to her new Batman Adventures costume, but different, because it covers her. Whereas the new Batman Adventures had her mouth exposed and her eyes white, here we see her, like, there's no mouth opening there. It's just her eyes exposed. And I think the reason for that is to not contradict the thing earlier in the issue about her always having masks where you could see her eyes. So I think that's why they changed.
He sent an early sketch, and they're like, no, you gotta.
Yeah, exactly. Because technically, the TNBA costume is not in continuity, of course. But the fact that they're using it as an homage here, I'm sure that's why they changed it like that. That's so funny to me. But I love it. And then does this sort of like cardboard cutout of Batman here, does this remind you of the Killing Joke? At least I don't think it's in the comic, but just in the animated movie, at least that cardboard cutout of Batman that the Joker has that he's taunting Gore to throw stuff at.
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah.
I definitely got an animated series vibe. One of the things I thought would have been cool. I mean, I know they got a lot of guest artists already, but this being Batman 50, I think they could have made it longer and nobody would have cared. Nobody would have been upset. But what I would have liked to see is, since they're honoring, they seem to be honoring the history of Batman and Catwoman, it would have been cool if you had artists rendering of even their live-action counterparts. So had we seen a page of, Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Keaton's Batman and Catwoman? And had we seen a page of, I guess it would have been hard to do. I mean, who cares? Really, continuity, it's just an anniversary issue kind of thing. Who cares? But, Lazuz and Cameron Bicondola.
Cameron Bicondola. And then Christian and
I think that would have been.
Yeah. Even Adam and Dooley.
I think those would have been additions if they had thrown those in too.
I know the BOF guys brought up that they wanted a Batman 66 page. No, so that I think that would have been cool
if they would have thrown all, like, let's embrace, if you're going to do a celebration of them too, you know, as a couple, I would have personally extended, I mean, it's not a detraction towards the issue, but if it was me putting this thing together, I would have included those. And
sure, no, that I what that better would be awesome,
to do it would be Alex Ross, right? Because he can draw, right?
Oh, yeah.
I just think that would have been amazing. So maybe, hey, that could be what, three good ideas I had this episode? It's not bad. See, I miss an episode and I come back with all kinds of good
I will never forget your amazing idea about the Earth 2 Batcat.
Hold on to that, because I'll bring it up every time you start annoying me. I'll just throw it in there. It'd be quiet.
But in terms of the letter here, this is one of my favorite parts of Bruce's letter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I can be someone undefined. I can be the man who looks into your eyes, who sees beyond the green, the man who knows you, who will always try to know you better, the man who loves you, who will always try to love you better. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, freaking poetry from Tom King. I mean, my goodness. I don't even know what to say about that. I've got tears in my eyes now just reading it. Like, it's incredible.
See, I personally, I kind of feel that some of the words here kind of reinforce the whole thing that, that, you know, he hasn't lived since his parents died and stuff like that. Because, you know, he's saying, I can be more than a boy whose parents are dead. But then I feel he's also saying that with Selena, he can start to live again, right? And he says, I can be the man who looks into your eyes. The man who knows you, who always tried to know you better.
That is a great point. And he even brings up the line, he refers to it specifically as, I can move beyond that trap, that simplification, that suicide. Going back, like I was talking about earlier, that he almost... like, even though obviously he didn't literally commit suicide, that in a way he did by dedicating his life to warring on criminals instead of being happy. And like, well, this is his, he's moving beyond that. He's saying being with Selena is him moving beyond that suicide. It's him living again. Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 Amen, Harry. Yes. Yes.
I didn't know this was a wrestling podcast, and I'm suddenly podcasting with what's that guy's name? Whatever that wrestler is that looks like a Billy Goat with a beard. Anybody know what I'm talking about?
I don't watch wrestling, so I have one guy that's no idea.
Yeah, I don't really watch wrestling either.
That's one of his gimmicks, so I just thought of him. But whatever.
I think the only wrestlers I know are The Rock and Cody Rhodes, because he was on Arrow.
Oh, that's a good one. Well, you know, Shazam. I mean, Black Adam.
Yeah.
Whenever he gets around to that. I got nothing more to add to this page. I don't know about you, Harry.
Yeah. No, not really.
Well, then we move on to, and I like how King, when he, a lot of the artists he brought back from earlier in his run, he had them do a little extra moment from, like I was talking about with Mitch Gerard's from Rooftops. Here we get another extra moment from Rules of Engagement, with Nightmare Batman and Nightmare Catwoman on horseback together. I mean, God, that's beautiful. I mean, I've talked about it before, how Joelle Jones has skyrocketed to being right behind Jim Lee in terms of my all-time favorite artists, and I love her page in this. This goes back to my thing about this issue cementing, finally being, like, the... No one at this point, as far as I'm concerned, you cannot argue that Catwoman is not a hero anymore. And it's really this ending part of her love letter here, which I'm going to read. If we're happy, and we could be so happy. If I help that lonely boy with the lonely eyes, I kill that engine. I kill Batman. I kill the person who saves everyone. And how can I do that? How can I love you so much and look into your eyes, into that endless blue, that gorgeous blue that calls me, knowing to save the world, heroes make sacrifices. That's the lesson of every story. I wish I could give my life, but I can't. I have to give more. My sacrifice is my love. It's you. I mean, this might have been the point in the issue when I was crying the hardest reading it for the first time.
You know what you should have done, Jordan? A live read on like YouTube. You could have watched it.
Somebody suggest. I think it was Peter. Maybe it was Peter Vera. Maybe it was somebody else.
You have no idea how many people were asking me what Jordan's reaction was. Like, I was getting questions. If I had to guess, that's when I posted the GIF of, you know, Bart Simpson getting his heart ripped out and kicked against the wall.
My phone was blowing up the morning that this.
We were all taking bets on if you ended up, you know, sobbing in the fetal position by the end of the issue. We were all taking bets. It was fun. But,
I had
anticlimactic for all of us. So I'm glad I didn't bet any money on this.
That morning, I had so many messages coming through on my social media, like, are you okay?
You got more messages than your birthday, which is kind of weird.
I think I might have. I think that might be true, which is perfectly fine, because this wedding was was by far a more exciting event for me than any birthday I've ever had. So
is your friend, my friend. I would seek it out.
Here's the thing. Obviously, I'm a huge Bat Cat shipper. I wanted the wedding to go through this issue. I'm not going to totally touch on my thoughts on why I still think this was the ending of it, why I'm still a fan of the ending of this issue, and why I'm still confident in the Bat Cat relationship. I'll touch on that once we get a little bit further towards the end. But just in terms of this part, I mean, how can I not, even though it's sad for me as a Batcat shipper what's going on here in this page of Selena coming to this realization, how can I not love that? How can I not love the beauty in that, her feeling like, in her making that? I mean, as not just a Batcat shipper, but as a diehard Catwoman fan, as a fan of that character, her making this heroic sacrifice, how can I not love that? How can I not love the beauty in this writing? I mean, in her sacrificing, I mean, and the way she talks about it too, we could be so happy. The way she talks about her loving him so much and looking in his eyes, I mean, this is some of the best right. I mean, I've talked about it before that I think Batman Annual Number 2 is the greatest piece of fiction I've ever read in my entire life. And this issue, Tom King's writing on this is almost on the level of what I think is his greatest work ever, which is Batman Annual Number 2. I mean, I keep saying it, the best way I can describe this is poetry. It's freaking poetry here with Tom King's writing. He is a master writer.
The page, another one of the story arcs I enjoyed was this one with that originally had this nightmare inspired Batman, you know, the nightmare of Batman sort of look. And so this page, this extension, this bonus image, if you will, is great. And again, this issue, there's no way I can say it any other way, is I will finally bestow the mantle of hero on Selina Kyle Catwoman. That's all I can say.
I'm so proud of you, Adam.
I'm not doing it for you. I'm just going by what I'm seeing. That's all I can do.
You don't have to be doing it for me. I'm just saying I'm proud of this.
Stop quasi-crying. Harry, any thoughts? Yeah.
Harry?
I mean, yet again, the callback to him being a child that hasn't lived. You know, the first line here is, you are still a child, Bruce, a hurt child. And that's just, you know, that just furthers the fact that he hasn't lived. And I mean, I don't really have much to say about this that you guys haven't already said.
Well, one other line I'll point out in this is another line that just epitomizes who Batman is. You're an engine that turns pain into hope.
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's cool.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Then we see Selena Kane Plaza. So we got Finger Tower before.
And I like the way they put Plaza, Bob so Kane both here again, just because of all the...
Yeah.
I love the place.
Yeah.
It's so fitting.
Well, anyway, we get Selena here. It looks... I don't know how you interpreted this. Did she leave that letter at the back?
I would assume so.
Is that
yeah.
what that's supposed to...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think so.
That's what I figured, too. But just her... I mean, I don't know. It's a heartbreaking scene, but
yeah,
just
there's
it's
no words,
I mean,
but you can see
it's
it in her face, like everything again.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, this the panel right after the letter at the computer, where I mean, you just see her makeup like having run down her face, and like clearly she was crying over the decision.
And you can't say enough the sort of bonds that good art and good like when they work together. So well, a book really clicks because mm-hmm. oftentimes you have in other books, so many other books I've seen and read, where it's either the writing's great but the art is so, or vice versa,
mm-hmm.
and there it's when you think about it in the grand scale of everything you've read, there's far less times where they both, you know, are top notch on the level, you know, simultaneously. And this is a case where they are.
Great writing and great art go together like Batman and Catwoman.
That was a little forced, but all right. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's forced, but it's true. Anyway, then we go to Finger Tower, where they were at the beginning of this issue, with
mm-hmm.
Alfred and Judge Wolfman and Bruce. And... you know, the one thing I love about this, especially is, I mean, is heartbreaking as it is the fact that Bruce knows Selena so well that he knows it's, I mean, yeah, it's heartbreaking, but he knows it's not. Like, Alfred's trying to suggest perhaps something happened, you know, maybe she, you know, and Bruce is like, no, like, he knows what's going on there. Like,
mm-hmm.
he knows her so well that he knows it's not something like that. So it just, it reinforces that understanding that he has of Selena, so, and just him leaping off the rooftop, just, and again, I love the parallel of Selena leaping off one rooftop and then Bruce leaping off the other one. Batman Begins
style.
Yeah,
and it's funny because you see, you know, when you look at the previous page where the tear is streaming, you know, the makeup and the tear is streaming down her face, and you look at Bruce and it's one tear. It just, it echoes the sort of how, you know, the character of Catwoman, whether she's when she's fighting or when whatever she's doing, is always in terms of what her emotional state is kind of very transparent. Whereas with Batman, it's always that usually like to the point, right? So that one tear is really, you know, they're even their tears are indicative of their sort of what's the word like for their stance, their behaviors, their emotion. So
Bruce rarely cries, but the one thing that could get him to do so is his cat leaving him.
Being shot.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Yes. Okay. Yes,
yeah.
That, but that's not him. I guess I should say once he becomes bad.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I should have clarified that. Michael Keaton once said he was. I don't know if you ever heard this story. He was at like a. He was at some store or whatever, and they had the Amazing Spider-Man 2 playing on the television. And he goes and he's watching on the television. There's a clerk at the store, and the clerk doesn't recognize Michael Keaton. And Michael Keaton turns to the clerk and goes, "Batman wouldn't cry." But it's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not true, but it is funny.
Well, his Batman.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I think something to note in this is, where did Bruce leave that letter to Selena? It's clearly on a bed, but like, I mean the, you know, the.
I think it's your bed at Wayne Manor. Or
well,
your
is it
bed,
because
I
mean it didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't really think of it as being that bad. I mean, perhaps it was. I just didn't recall that being like the background that's above the headboard on that bed. I didn't recall that being the background.
We've seen it a couple times. We saw it in Batman 44. We saw it in Everyone Loves Ivy. I don't know. I'd have to go look back at those pages to see what the headboard looked like. But maybe they changed the headboard. I mean, even if it doesn't match up, there's always that justification. So maybe they changed it. But it, I mean, that's my guess. But then again, I don't know if you guys have read Catwoman number one yet.
Yeah, I did. No.
You did. Okay. And I thought, oh, I'm very proud of you, Adam. You said you were like, oh, I've had enough Catwoman.
Well, I'm not gonna read that. Like, I have to see where what. Cause,
so are you gonna keep reading?
Well, based off the first issue, yeah, I like the first issue enough to keep going. Yeah.
I called it. I knew you were gonna read it.
I read because it said no.
I'm proud of you. So,
two things. Bill from Batman on Film said, don't read Catwoman after. So he made it sound like there was a continuation, and then even the book itself says read 50 first. So they hooked me by, okay, there's follow up. Let me see where it's going. But
okay. Well, yes. Anyway, it was Catwoman number one was phenomenal. But I will say that in that book, Alfred forwards her belongings to her. So it made it seem like she didn't go back to Wayne Manor. Bruce did leave this letter here.
Forward the letter, that's a question.
Maybe he forwarded the letter too. Yeah, that's a good point. Then we get to this next page, which, I mean, again, I was just bawling at this point, but it's so beautiful. It's a slightly different look at the just iconic proposal scene from the end of Batman number 24. Again, drawn by David Finch, who did the original one. But he draws it slightly differently here. But just the look of happiness here in Bruce and Selina's eyes, it just contrasted with where they are in this issue at the time. And it just makes it all the more heartbreaking. But just him there, and you just remember where – you remember this. I mean, for me, it was like it's just the ultimate – it's just the ultimate, like, twisting the knife. It's like, because it's showing you this such a happy Batcat moment in the midst of all this. It's the moment. It's my favorite. Honestly, this is my favorite panel of any comic in the history of comics. My favorite single panel. Because as a huge Batcat shipper, it was something I'd always dreamed of seeing. And so, like, here it's like seeing this. This is where – this is – I mean, obviously the – lead up to the wedding really started when Catwoman was introduced in King's Run, but then, I mean, this is where it finally materialized, leading into issue number 50 eventually, but it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful image, but also heartbreaking. And of course, Bruce ends his letter with, he finishes with Bat in a couple pages, but love always.
And it's the Jim Lee, it's a Jim Lee rooftop kiss.
Jim Lee rooftop kiss? What?
The last page.
No, that's the yeah.
Well,
that's no,
the last sorry, page. Sorry, sorry. No,
I was. Yeah.
Wait,
what?
It's Finch did the Love Always.
Yeah.
It was Catwoman's page with all my heart. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know what happened? I clicked the arrow and it went to the next page. So that's why I was
I got you. Well, before we get to that page, did you have anything more you wanted to say about this page?
Well, it's a great image. I liked the image the first time I saw it, and this reworked version is awesome. It's just
I think it's really well done.
Where they've gone in the court, like where that was in time and where they are now is totally opposite ends of the spectrum. So. But yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Harry,
I don't really have much else to add on this page. But yeah,
this next page by Jim Lee, my all-time favorite artist. Even though like I said, my favorite comic book panel, my single favorite panel is the original David Finch ending to Batman 24. But in terms of my favorite guest artist pages in this book, it's this one: Batman and Catwoman kissing here with the lightning in the background. There's so much electricity in the scene. It feels so intense. We've got With All My Love, the end of Catwoman's letter here. And I'll tell you guys, what I hear for some reason, and I think it's because of the two lines on the previous page, Love Always, and then With All My Love here, what I hear when I see this page, as soon as I saw it, a song started playing in my head. And it's the part of the song Love Song by 311 or The Cure or whatever version you want, because there's several covers of that song. But the part that goes, I will always love you. You know that? Do you guys know that song?
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I can't really get how it goes.
Your rendition of it makes me not want to listen to it.
Well, you're talking about my awful singing, but it's song. It's in one of my favorite movies, 50 First Dates, with Adam Miller and Drew Barry, and Batman First Star, Drew Barrymore. I love that song, and that's what I hear when I will always love you. That's what I hear when I see this page, and it's just it's
you know,
intense,
if our listenership drops
it's so
because
like
because of your singing.
it feels like there should be like intense music playing in this scene. Like it's just it's so like the wind's blowing, there's lightning. It's incredible. I mean, Jim Lee, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. It's phenomenal.
It truly is.
I highly recommend both of you, when we're done recording this, pull up this page. Make it full screen or whatever. Like I've got it right now on Comixology on my laptop, and then play that song, Love Song by I prefer the 311 version, but both it and the Cure version are amazing. Play that behind it, and I think you'll get a great experience.
I'll wait a couple of days. You're singing out of my head. Then maybe I'll try it.
Well, that song's so good that it'll probably wash my bad rendition of it out of your head.
So. And then we got a couple of other pages before the end credit tease, if you will.
Capullos.
Yeah.
I love Capullos. Yeah. Oh, it's I think it's really well done. Yeah.
Sort of the gargoyle.
Gargoyle.
Whatever bird.
It's on the yeah.
And the cityscape in the background. It's amazing.
It makes it the way it's drawn, it makes it look like they're so high up, like just like it's
like the hint of there's a bit of unless I'm going colorblind could be a little bit of you know that purple-esque look to that's coming in through Batman's cape because the new
Yeah, I see that.
Well,
yeah.
It is. If you look at the belt, it is the Rebirth suit because it's.
And,
if you look at the belt
and
there,
for whatever
it's
reason, I've always loved that, like that little touch of purple in the cape, in the Rebirth design.
Oh yeah.
Design. I dig it.
I love
it because it's like a callback again to the original
the purple gloves.
Design,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I saw somebody post on Twitter. I wish I could give credit to who said this. Yeah. I can't recall. But when this image first got released, because it's one of the variant covers, they said, we now know who the Dom is in this relationship.
I think that was from the start. I don't think we needed any reinforcement of that. It's plain as day.
Well, anyway, I thought that was
great. You get the new cover, which is cool.
Yeah, and I love how they end their letters with Bat and Cat. Like again, like it's so sweet. Actually, Adam, you said you agree when it comes to the letters.
Yeah,
so
it works.
I think that's so sweet. And then yes, the final guest artist page, Lee Weeks, who of course it's very fitting. I feel like that his is the last one because he told the greatest final Batman story ever, which was Batman Annual Number 2. With he was the artist on that, so it's very fitting that his would be the final one here because he told the end of first
and then,
the story
that post credit scene. It's better. I will say this: it's better than any post credit scene Marvel's ever done. How about that?
my jaw dropped at this scene. It's first of all, like I was saying before, Tom King has been building, even if you didn't realize it throughout the run, different pieces, the way he connects things over the course of his run, everything's connecting. Now, here, this is when I'm finally going to go into my theory about what I think is going on here and what I think is going to happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think is happening here. Obviously, Bane has manipulated things and sabotaged the wedding. And has had this whole conspiracy against Batman and Catwoman. And what I love about this, even though, I mean, I hate it, but I also think it's brilliant, is that basically he couldn't break Batman physically again. So what did he do? He broke his heart. And I think that that is brilliant. But here's the thing. First of all, I think it's possible that a lot of these characters in this final scene are being manipulated by Psycho Pirate, because we see Psycho Pirate here. So I think Holly might be manipulated by Psycho Pirate. I think Gotham Girl might be. And I think Thomas Wayne Batman might be. Mm. In terms of Thomas Wayne Batman, that's obviously one of the most intriguing ones, because last we saw of him in the button, it looked like he was wiped from existence.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious how he wound up getting saved from that fate. But in terms of what I think is going to happen, here's the thing. Tom King has said previously that the entirety of his 100-issue run, the focus of the entirety of it, is the Bat-Cat relationship. He reiterated that on Twitter recently, and I should have pulled up the tweet already so I could get his exact words, but I'm pulling it up now. And that's something I've said. Tom King views them as Endgame. Just read Batman Annual Number 2. Just like I view them as Endgame, he views them as Endgame. Just like I'm a huge Batcat shipper, Tom King is too. And I'm scrolling through his Twitter timeline now to find the exact words, because I thought he phrased it really well. So bear with me for just 1 second there. But a lot of my fellow Batcat shippers were very concerned by the way this issue ended. And Tom King alleviated those concerns by reiterating his point about the entirety of his 100-issue run focusing on the Batcat relationship. Here's what he said. I finally found the tweet. Batman 50 is not the end. This is a 100-issue story documenting and celebrating the love of Batman and Catwoman. Whatever happens, whatever anyone says, nothing's going to spoil that. Okay, so here's the thing. If he's telling a 100-issue story about Batman and Catwoman's love for one another, he's not going to break them up permanently halfway through. I mean, if he's only at issue 50, he's not going to do that. Nor do I think he's going to do it ever, period, because I think, like I said, he sees them as Endgame, and I think he ships them just like I do. So that's why I'm not mad about this ending. Everybody thought I was going to be mad about it because I'm a huge Batcat shipper, and I'm not. Did I want them to get married? Yes, obviously I wanted them to get married in this issue. But I see what's going on here, and here's my theory for what's going to happen. Batman and Catwoman are going to discover that there was this conspiracy against them. They are going to team up to defeat Bane and these cohorts of his. And then they are finally going to go through with the wedding for real. That is what I fully believe is going to happen. To quote The Dark Knight, I believe in Tom King. I believe in Tom King. I believe in him. Oh, I forgot to mention one other person who's in this image, which is not really a person, but Skeets. Skeets is in this image, so a callback to Booster Gold issues too, because I forgot to mention him when I was reading off who's in this picture. I didn't read off everybody. I'll read off everybody. I just mentioned the people who I thought might have been manipulated by Psycho Pirate, but that's the Riddler, the Joker, Psycho Pirate, Bane, Holly, Gotham Girl, Scarface, Ventriloquist, Thomas Wayne Batman, Hugo Strange, and Skeets. And the other thing I'll say is I think that there's one other theory that I have, which was influenced a little bit by the people on Batforce Radio, so I got to shout them out again. I think I mentioned them already on this episode. Is they brought up the idea that perhaps even Catwoman could be manipulated psychologically somehow, because she, in issue number 49, she got shot by one of the Joker's bullets, and then she was laughing at the end. So they theorized that perhaps she could have been infected. Maybe there was Joker venom on that bullet that she could have been infected by, and that sort of influenced her psychological state in this issue, and that's why she was so easy to – that's why Holly was able to manipulate her as efficiently, I guess I should say, as she was. So that's possible, another thing going on here. That's my theory. This is why I'm not mad. I still fully believe that the wedding is going to happen, just not yet. And this whole issue was still, even beyond this ending, even if it had ended, even if, like, besides the ending, forgetting about this ending, it was another love letter to my OTP from Tom King. It was beautiful. I love this issue. That's what I'll leave it at for now.
I think that after all this setup and all this, you know, lead up to, they should get married. However,
amen.
I don't see DC letting it stick for any length of time, because even if they get married in 100, Tom King is Lee, that's his last hurrah. So
I think it'll be before that. I think it'll be before issue. I think it'll be in issue 75 at the latest.
If they're gonna, do married it and not let it be permanent, I don't think DC has the stones to do that. Personally, the only relationship they've left intact, and even that took a break for 5 years, was Lois and Clark. Barry and Iris are no longer a couple. They're no longer married. Wally and what's her face? Linda. Yeah.
Linda.
She doesn't even remember him, so that shows you how. So. If they let it happen and it happens in 75, and at least they're married for, let's say, what would that be, 25 issues, then at least you can say, I'll buy that. If they get married in 100. As some sort of last hurrah for Tom King's last issue, and then don't have the guts to follow through with it for more than, because if you're going to marry off a character, right, at the bare minimum, let's see the status quo change and the ramifications for a minimum of a year is my opinion.
My hope, and I've said this before, is that Tom King having them married will set a status quo where it sort of becomes the status quo, where like that's just a given that, oh, Batman and Catwoman are married.
I have zero faith in that, because I just don't trust DC to do that. Personally, I think what's more likely is they're going to come to an understanding where they can be together. They can be a couple, but it won't be in a formalized "we're married" setting. You guys get what I'm saying? That's my personal theory on what's going to happen. If they do marry them, and it is an issue 100, then, like I said, at the bare minimum, whoever takes over and comes on has to at least see the fallout and ramifications and what happens next for at least a minimum of a year. Because the way, like, this single issue, as you can tell from my review of it, I really, really, really liked it. But there are things about it that I'm not happy with. And one of the things is the way it was marketed. It's marketed as a wedding, as this monumental event of the summer. They plaster the after the "I Do Kiss" as the main cover, and yet that's not there. And I can understand, even though, like I said, even though I'm 50-50 on the way Tom King writes them as a couple, I can totally understand why there's a core fan base, you know, of people that wanted this that are pissed off. So, and I totally get their perspective. I also think it's really stupid on DC's part to sanction and okay an article in the New York Times, or I think it was the New York Times, correct?
Yeah, it was.
With that amazing piece of art, by the way, by Mikel Janin, with them to get with Bruce and Selina together, looking at that the New York Times with them. Kissing with the McKellian cover on the.
But I think it's incredibly stupid of DC to okay and sanction that a story that basically spoils the friggin', you know, the moment. Essentially, it doesn't give you the twist, but it spoils what everybody came to see, right? What the event was built as. That is that is very unfortunate for the creators who were telling the story, because, and their reasoning is, well, we didn't want spoilers to get out. Look, fans, if fans are going to be jerks and spoil an issue because they found out the results anyway, they're going to do that no matter where you go, whether it's Reddit or wherever the hell you know. If you're going to be an ass, you're going to be an ass, you're going to spoil it for people. However, yeah. I think readers deserve to have these moments play out as untainted as possible. And for DC to basically say, here's the info. And again, it's like, this is something, a DC controlled thing where they knew it was going to get on social media, right? And you know the way it's going to be titled, it's going to be framed, that information is going to get out. Whereas if, like, at least if people are expecting it, and if they hear about, okay, you know, copy or copies that people start spreading around, you can choose to mute certain words and stuff so that you can be as or in Jordan's case, he was barred from Twitter, so he was fortunate not to see that. But, you know, I think it's incredibly stupid of DC to have done that. And I think it undermines what Tom King and all the artists that have contributed to this issue and contributed to his run have done. Mm-hmm. So I'm very upset in that sense. Because it reminds me of when I got spoiled of Hush's ending and the twist. All because of some jackass on the message board who put it in a thread title that wasn't even relating to Hush. So you can imagine when it's plastered on a national publication or international publication. So that's upsetting. And again, to me, like, as I said earlier, I think I said it while we were recording, or maybe I said it off air. I have zero, whatever I think of the way Tom King writes certain things, I have zero issue with the idea of Batman and Catwoman being together as a couple. So if DC plans on going forward with it, I hope it's something that has ramifications. And I don't think Batman has to give up the Catwoman. That's not where I'm going with it. I don't think that needs to be the case. But if the brass of DC and the writers that are writing, you know, post Tom King feel that that has to be the case for him to be happy, then again, I'm going to say it again, have the balls to have him pick a successor and stick with legacy for a bit, for at least, like I said, a year, if not more. Otherwise, if it's just going to be a gimmick and it's just going to be a sales, you know, a thing that you plaster and you build up for months to try and boost your sales, then that's not the reason to do it. And I get that was Tom King, that Tom King is saying that Batman and Catwoman is his endgame. And that's cool, and we'll see how that plays out. And I'm gonna take him at face value, whether they get married or not. Ultimately, we'll see. But I believe that them as a couple is his goal, regardless of how that manifests. But I think selling this as the big wedding issue, when there was no actual wedding, is on some level, despite the fact that I liked what, you know, the issue as a whole, on some level it's very gimmicky, and it's an overt sales gimmick. And more to the point, I'm a little upset that, now granted, I've read my friend's copies, because we get comics at the same stores. I read his comics when I was over at his house. I read the four issues, you know, the Prelude to the Wedding, four or five, whatever it is. And to me, they were all, at the end of the day, utterly meaningless.
They were great.
In the long run, to me, I'm glad that you enjoyed every bit of them, or however much of it you enjoyed. To me, they come off as meaningless. Yeah.
Every bit.
To me, they come off as meaningless. So I feel like I said, this comes off as selling it the way they sold it, comes off as gimmicky. You could have told this same story without building it as the Wedding of the Century or the Wedding of whatever, or however they build it, you could have told a similar story where on the road to the wedding, without, you know, building it with the pomp and circumstance of, this is the wedding, this is the... To me, it's kind of a little bit of a gimmicks thing to it. And I think they actually cheated. I know Jordan's happy with the results because he believes that in the end they're going to be married for 100 years and blah, 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 blah. But you cheated.
Or 100
years. But to me, they cheated a lot of fans that wanted more and that expected more. Mm-hmm. So I feel kind of bad for them. And I think some of DC's tact stunk in the way they decided to promote and the spoiler thing, that really stinks. Yeah. But overall, as a single issue, and as a culmination of what's happened so far, I did really enjoy it. So those are my.
Can I say one more thing from this final page?
Sure.
Real quick. Which is that Holly's dialogue to Bane here about. She's devastated, but determined, as you said she'd be. I don't know about him. We left before. I didn't see what he was. Like, the fact that she's scared about just how devastated, like, she's scared about how bad this could, like how much, like, she knows how much Batman loves Catwoman, and the fact that she's that scared about what Catwoman leaving Batman could, like, she's, like she's honestly terrified, it sounds like, of what that could have made him. And like that's pretty there's something very chilling about that line, but also that really reinforces Batman's love for Catwoman.
And I will say the twist was cool. I'm excited to see where that goes, for sure. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I would say as a Batcat fan, I was disappointed by the wedding not happening. And I mean, knowing that, you know, the Batcat relationship is kind of like the focus of the run, you know, I'm not as disappointed as I would be, but don't worry. You know, I'm just, I mean, I'm just, you know, a little disappointed, but as solely a Batman fan, I mean, I just love this ending. I love the whole issue, and I love the ending because I think this is such a brilliant twist ending for a Batman issue. And, like, it's just done so well. And, I mean, Adam, you mentioned the thing with the prelude to the wedding issues not really meaning as much anymore because of, you know, what's happened here. And, you know, I personally would say I would at least hold my – judgment on whether or not they, you know, mean anything on how whole Batcat relationship is handled past this. Because, you know, if it was a situation where they were just going to, like, throw away the Batcat relationship after this, then, yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to hold off my judgment.
If my theory is that they're in a relationship but they don't end up going through with the actual wedding, these are...
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, because they're leading to a wedding that, if it doesn't happen, it is kind of, it would be kind of pointless.
Yeah, that's true.
But I know, like,
and so then
I'll reevaluate them once Tom King
goes over
and see where.
Yeah. And I also think, I mean, initially I was thinking, oh, now they'll do the wedding at the 100th issue. For the last hurrah, but I mean, thinking about that more, I'm starting to think that perhaps they won't actually take that route, and they actually would do the wedding a bit earlier, and they'd find some other important thing to Batman to bring for the last issue of Tom King's run. But you know, I'm excited to see how they move on from this and what they do in terms of all of that. And then speaking to you know, Holly sounding scared in this. I mean, that, like, I think that's amazing because, you know, she does sound scared, and I can only imagine that she could be worried that if Batman ever finds out what she did, what, you know, if he ever finds out the conspiracy, which of course he's going to, but, you know, to her, she doesn't know that he will. So if he ever does, like, could be scared by, you know, what he might do when he finds out. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how Tom King continues his run after this.
An interesting dynamic going forward. See what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jordan, how are we going to rate this thing? Are we going to do it like
a... well, the way we always do, bro.
So,
yeah.
Should we give yours? Because yours is going to be the obvious.
This is a little bit harder for me than you might think. I am very, very tempted to give it an A+, because even though it didn't, like, I'm debating between an A or an A+. I'm thinking about knocking it down an A for the fact that, well, my OTP didn't actually get married in the issue. But because this issue nonetheless was just the most magnificent, magical love letter to the Batcat relationship, and because I'm so confident that it's just an obstacle to them actually finally getting married, and because I know that the second half of King's run is still going to be focused on the Batcat relationship, and because I believe that this wedding is still going to happen and that they're going to team up and, like I said, defeat Bane and finally get married, like, I'm so confident in that, and I, like I said, I believe in Tom King. And even though, again, I was disappointed by the ending, I loved the love letters, the art, just the whole tribute to my OTP that this issue was. That's why I'm tempted to give it an A+, even though the wedding didn't go through. So I'm teetering back and forth, A or A+, but for now, I'm going to go... Because of how confident I am in, because of how much I believe in Tom King, I'm gonna go with an A+.
Right. And I guess you'll come back to it when 100 comes on, we see what actually happens.
Well, hopefully, and this is what I believe. Yeah, I won't need to, because my rating will be the same.
We'll give you the chance to reserve the right to change it if if things don't go as you plan. Harry, what's your thought? What's your rating?
I'm not really sure what rating I could give it. I mean, I'm kind of stuck between an A or an A+ on this one, because I'm really disappointed that the wedding didn't end up going through. But then, you know, the whole ending of it was, you know, Batman is, you know, he's separated from, you know, the love of his life, and in that final panel of Bane, there's also Thomas Wayne Batman. So that's his father there. So, you know, the possibilities in future issues, like, that's just making me, like, I'm so, like, I want to give this issue, like, an A+, because it opened the door for so many amazing possibilities. But then again, the wedding not happening was rather disappointing. And I'm not really sure if I can settle on an A or an A+ on this. I think I just have to say it's somewhere in between.
All right, fair enough. Yeah,
fair enough.
We'll accept that. for me, it's like, look, I was never. Again, everybody knows I'm 50-50 on this Tom King run so far, but I really like this issue, and it did enough to make me at least see the possibility of where Tom King was going to take not only the relationship but the mm-hmm. future that he set up with, you know, with the tease of the end, and all the guest artists and all that stuff was fantastic. Again, it's one of those issues that it's like an anniversary issue that you'd expect from a milestone 50 or 100 or whatever, you know, whatever the numbering is. So it checked all those boxes. Where I'm disappointed is the fact that, again, the fact that even though I'm somebody that wasn't, you know, 100% behind what King was doing, I think the wedding, regardless, should have happened in this issue because of the way it was built up and marketed, etc., etc. So on that level, it's a little disappointing, even from somebody who wasn't totally sold on this wedding aspect from the beginning. So all that thrown together, I'll give it. I'll give it an A. That's my grade on it.
Okay, that's pretty solid.
We'll see where it goes in the next 50 issues.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sure. I can't wait. You know, once they announce what they're doing for 75, we'll come back and probably review that issue as well.
Yeah.
So before we get out of here, let's remind everybody, because this has been a definitely a Batman-centric episode, that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. And before we get out of here, we have to do social media plugs. So Harry, where can people find you on social media?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not really that active on social media, aside from on Facebook, which you can just,
that's okay. It's up to you.
I mean, yeah, you can just find me on Facebook, by my name, Harry Malinowski. I'm a part of various DC groups. So
awesome. Jordan, yeah. Where can they find you? Obviously not on Twitter, but where can they?
Well, like I always say, I'm crossing my fingers because usually we record our episodes a few days before we actually release them. So maybe I'll be back on when they finally release
them. I think they're just this episode finally releases. Yeah, next week.
It's been over a month at this point. I was really hoping I'd be back on for Batcat Week, and then I had to do that on Facebook instead, which, I mean, I still got to participate, but it was mostly a Twitter thing, so that was kind of a bummer, but I don't know. I don't know. I was told that I was supposed to be back on soon, but then I still haven't heard anything. So we'll see. You can find me on pretty much all other social media at BatFanJordanV. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. Actually, I forgot to check if we got any new ones before we start recording. So I am doing that now and stalling as I do that. Yeah. I am looking now. No new ones. And I do want to solicit some. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, I guess we'd love to hear from you and form an iTunes review and help us out. Thank you.
If you want to follow me on social media, you can do that on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi. And if you want to find me on Facebook, just my name, which is listed at the bottom of the show notes, and also the Facebook group for Multiverse Musings of DC Comics Podcast. Until next time, have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week, depending on when you're listening to this. So long, everybody.
Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way